One of the most famous sugyas in Sanhedrin Shas is the sugya of Shikal Adas that appears on Daf Lamed Gimel. Lamed Aleph goes over to Lamed Beis. A good chunk of the sugya appears on Vav Lamed Aleph, and a little bit of the sugya appears on Hey Lamed Aleph. The premise of the discussion is that a dayan shetor is really mechuyev to make good the hefsid mamon that he caused. And yesterday we reviewed this. The Gemara says in Baba Tama and Daf Kuf, the Gemara has a machlekes hatanoim, machlekes hameir and the rabbanon. The Gemara had a tradition that there was a machlekes hameir and the rabbanon, whether garmi or the mamazik be garmi is chayv apater. The way we learn the Gemara, what it says is like this: or the mamazik be adayim is chayv, or the mamazik ayde grom is grom be nizik and apater. Everybody agrees in garmi, which is in between Groma and Adam HaMazik, that's the Machlekes HaMeir and the Rabbanon. The Gemara says, where Rav Meir? Where Rabbanon? Where is it? They had an oral tradition. Where is it? Rav Meir, Rabbanon, Gemara finally crosses the HaMishnah. The Gemara quotes HaMishnah from Kilayim, HaMishnah is Rav Meir. It doesn't really say Beferish in the Tanoim anywhere. It doesn't really say Beferish in the Mishnah or Brisa that it's Machlekes HaMeir and Rabbanon. They had an oral tradition like that. And then the Pesach is that Tanid and Din and Gamil. That's the way we understand the Gemara. The Rashbam Rishonim who learned the Gemara differently, they understood that Grom and Garmi is the same thing. And the Machloikis, whether Dainin and Dinin Garmi is a Machloikis, whether Grom and Menizikin is Chayiv, or Potan, we pass in Chayiv, so Grom and Menizikin is Chayiv. But that's not the accepted opinion. Because we distinguish, the accepted opinion is like Tosfos and like the Ramban and the Rov Rishonim, that the two extremes, everybody agrees. Adam HaMazik B'Adayim is Chayiv and Grom and Menizikin is Potan, and the Machloikis is in the middle. Whether Garmi is Chayiv or Potan, and we pass in Chag, so that's why there's a big discussion. How do you determine what's called in the middle? What's called Grom and what's called Garmi? When do you consider it belonging to that extreme, that Grom and Zikan is Potter, and when do you say it's in the middle and it's Chayiv? So it's a whole discussion. The Ramban has a whole contrast, and Taisus has a discussion about it. So there's more there in Baba Kama Daf Kuf, and Daf Kuf, Daf Sanchez, and Daf Kuf. The Gemara discusses the Dayan Shetor, the Dayan of Paskin and Indin Torah, the three Dayanim in Indin Torah who Paskin. Then the Gemara discusses what if it was a majority vote, what if it's 2-1? One said the correct Pesach, and two said the incorrect Pesach. So because of the two, the one was outvoted, and this caused the Hefsid moment of $300, let's say. So do you say that the two who paskin wrong have to split it among themselves, each one pays 150? Or do you say, no, the third guy doesn't pay anything, one pays 100, one pays 100, and the third guy is outvoted? Or do you say, no, each one of the three has to pay $100? That's a whole discussion in the Gemara later. How do you calculate? What do you do if one was outvoted? One said the right Pesach, and two said the wrong Pesach. There's a lot of discussions about the details. So the Gemara says there in Bava Kama, in the Sugi of Garmi, that this is a Mishnah in Bechairis. The Mishnah in Bechairis says that the Dayan Shetor, Donis Adin, Zika Sachaitchi, Vesapater, he passed him wrong. Says the Gemara on the next daf on Vava Medal. The Gemara quotes that Mishnah from Bechairis. Donis Adin, the Dayan who passed him wrong has to pay. And then the Mishnah has another case. Rav Tarfon once paskined on a behemah that it's a trefa, nitla ha'em shalah. The whole Beis HaRechem was removed. So he thought that would cause the animal to become a trefa. So he paskined the animal was a trefa, v'hechilu l'klov, so they fed it to the dog. After it was ready too late, they had already fed it to the dog, then they bring to the attention of Rav Tarfon that he made a little mistake. That there was an old tradition from the earlier generations that nitla ha'im shalah is kshera. How do you know that this will not cause the animal to die within a year? Usually that's the definition of a trefa, if the animal is destined to die within a year. So they say because Maisim Mechayom in Alexandria, they never release any para. They never sell any para mechutz lamedina unless they take out the whole Beis HaRechem in order that they won't be able to reproduce on their own, because they had these wonderful paras in Alexandria. So this, from the earlier Tanaim, they already established that. That Nitlaim Shalom is not a trefa. And Rav Tarfon Psak is considered Toi B'Dvar Mishnah. It's absolutely wrong. Tarfon lived before Rav Yudha Anasi edited the Mishnayis, but it's still called Toi B'Dvar Mishnah, because the Psak is absolutely wrong. There's nothing to negotiate about. Nothing to pilfer about. It's absolutely 100% wrong. So, so the Gemara says, just like a dying Shatona Din Torah is held responsible to pay, so Amorah HaRoah, who passed in L'chumra, and then it comes out that that the Psak should have been L'kula, and they threw out the food. He passed on food that it's treif or that it's tomei, and then they mixed it in with real tomei dika food, then it comes out that it was tohar, and by mixing it in, it just became tomei. So it comes out that the dayan is responsible for the hefsed mon. So the Mishnah says that in all these cases, the rabbi is held responsible. That's why rabbis should take out insurance. That's why they have clergy insurance. The rabbi is going to pass him wrong and be held responsible. So the Gemara has a discussion, how did he pass him wrong? If it's Nasim and Nasim Biyad, he passed him, if you owe him the $1,000, now give me the money right now and I'm going to give it over. So Nasim and Nasim Biyad, that's L'chalade if he's a Gazim. Then it turns out that the Psak was wrong and he had no right to take the money, hand it over to the other person. So that's L'chalades, that's Gazlon, Mazik Biyadayim, everybody agrees to that. And if by the Psak, when the rabbi passed him that the behemoth is a trefa, he fed it to the dog, so he's Mamasha Mazik Biyadayim. And the same thing if he passed him that something is Tomei, and then to demonstrate that it's Tomei, he throws in a dead mouse. He throws in a dead one of the Shmoneh Shvatim to demonstrate that it's so Tomei. I'm not causing anything, I'm not causing this situation to get any worse, or I'm mixing it in with other Tomei Dika things. He throws it into the incinerator right away to demonstrate that it's Tomei and you can't use it. Then he finds out later on that he made a mistake. So that's Mamash HaMazik B'Yadayim. In such a case, we understand everybody will agree to what it says in the Mishnah that the rabbi is all responsible to pay. The Shaila is, what if the rabbi just passed into the Shaila and he assumes the Balabatim are going to listen to his Psak? They came and they asked for a Din Torah. They came to ask for Shaila in Trefus or in Tumah Vitara. And then based on the erroneous Psak that the rabbi gives, the Balabatim pay the money on their own, or the Balabatim so that thing Gemara says is considered garmi, not grama minizik, and that's considered garmi, and that's dependent on the machlekes and the rabbanon. Since we passed and dinin and didn't garmi, so mikra didn't dine would have to pay in such a case. That's what it says in Bava Kama. So the Gemara says on Bava Manala, if not so fast, if he's toy b'dvar mishnah, if the mistake that the dayan made is an outright mistake, toy b'dvar mishnah, nothing to discuss. Then the Baldin who won the Din Torah the first time around has to give the money back to the other Baldin if he's still around. If the Baldin is still around, if he didn't skedaddle to South Africa. If he's still around, so then you make him give back the money. But if the toy was a toy bidover, if it's a toy not bidvar mishnah, a toy bishika ladas, a mistake in judgment. What is a mistake in judgment? So who says that it's a mistake? Maybe it's right. If it's a judgment call, so why is it a toy b'shikal adas? It's a matter of shikal adas. So the Gemara says no. It's a machlekes hatanoim or a machlekes hamaroim, and it's not up kipaskin clearly. But the sugya d'shmaita is the way it's generally assumed. The p'sak halach is one way, and this rav or this dayan paskin the other way. So you can't really say that he made a mistake, because that's not the generally accepted psak. And if he would have realized that generally it's not that's not the accepted view, he would have passed, and he himself would have passed in the other way. He just wasn't aware of that. But it's not black on white that it's dead wrong. It's just that that's not the way it's usually assumed. So that's called the toys, but that's called the toys b'shikal adas. So the toys and the shikal adas, the baldin, if it's a case of dinim ominous, the baldin who won the din Torah the first time around can tine. I hold like the first psak. If the dain is a toy b'dvar mishnah, what do you mean I hold like the first psak? The first psak is dead wrong. It's toy b'dvar mishnah. But if the first psak is not really dead wrong, it's just toy b'shikal adas. It's not really correct. But you can't really say that it's 100% wrong. So then the baldin who won the first time is now a muhsak, is holding on to the moment. He says, I hold like the first psak. I don't want to hear that the rabbi wants to reverse the psak. That's what the Ran explains. The Chedushi Aran. if the Baldin, I think Rashi says it also, Rashi says the Ranta, if the Baldin who won the first time claims, I want to stick to the first Psak, if the Baldin will agree to give back the money, that'll be wonderful. But he doesn't have to agree to give back the money. He can say, I'm the Mufzak and I'm Oitzim Machaber all of a Raya, you need a Raya Limta. And just because the Sugya the Alma is not so, I'm not prepared to surrender my money. So that's called the Torah B'Shikol Adas. The Psak remains. You can't force the Baldin one the first time to surrender the money. And then the rabbi who passed wrong is held responsible to pay. In such a case, it's going to help if you have Nitilus Rishus, either from the Reish Galusa in Bavel or from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. The Nasi in Eretz Yisrael means the Rosh HaSanhedrin. What is that based on? What does it help if you have Nitilus Rishus? So we had on Gimla Menalp, we had on Machlekes Rashi and Tesvis. Rashi was a problematic shita. The Ran somehow defended Rashi, but we didn't even go through it. We learned like Tesis and like the Ramban. Tilus Ushus simply means Hefke Bezna Hefke. That if the government feels that it's important to encourage this doctor to remain in medicine, or it's important to encourage this rabbi to remain in the field of Dine Torah, or in the field of Paskening Yisra the Heter, and even to the extent of relieving him, if told, Lo Yishalmu, if the doctor will cause harm to someone, we have to relieve him. Otherwise he's going to have to pay high insurance. It doesn't pay for him to remain in the field of medicine, so he's going to leave and we'll be losing a good man. Or the same thing in the Dayanis, he's a very good Dayan, just once in a long, long while he may make a mistake. So to encourage him to remain in the field, we want to relieve him from paying in case he makes a mistake. So that's called Netilas Rishus. That's called Netilas Rishus. And that's based on Hefke Bezen Hefke. That's based on Dina de Malkusa Dina. The Reish Golusa, the Nasi Sheberetz Yisrael has a right to relieve people from paying, either the Rofei Shekilkel or the Dayan Shator. The Nasi Sheberetz Yisrael, the Rosh HaSanhedrin, he has a right to pull to employ the rule of Hefker Bezna Hefker. And the Reish Golusa in Eretz Yisrael is not necessarily a learned individual, is not necessarily a rabbi at all. Some of them were low lives, but the Reish Golusa has the authority of Dina the Malchusa Dina. Rashi Goli Yosheva Balhom Mokam Melechem Omdim. That's how the Rambam writes. Based on this pasuk, they also Shevit Miyudim, Mechoki Kumbein Raglov, the Rashi Goli Yosheva Balhom Mokam Melechem Omdim. That's what they have the Tziyun of the Rambam on that pasuk right in the middle of Hamad Aleph. He quotes the pasuk and he quotes the cloth. So then the Gemara has an interesting discussion. What if a person, the Jewish people all over the world belong to one organization of Klal Yisrael? So what if you have a Hefke Bezen Hefke in Eretz Yisrael? Does that work in Bavel? Or what if you have a Dina Malchus Adina in Bavel? Does that work in Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara comes to the conclusion, in one direction it does work, in the other direction we're not so sure, and the answer is it does not work. Only works in one direction, not in the other. Which direction? If you have Rishus, the Tilus Rishus from the Reish Galuso and Tor, Rofi Shetor, Kilkela, Dayan Shetor, so not only if he's Toya in Bavel, even if he's Toya in Eretz Yisrael, he'll also be relieved of payment because the Koyach of the Reish Galusa, it's a Dasa Prusa on the whole world. Not only does he have the right to relieve people from paying, the Reish Galusa can use the principle of Dina and Machos Adina to relieve people from paying, not only in Bavel, even in Eretz Yisrael, but the Rosh HaSanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, his authority only goes on the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Into Bavel it doesn't go. Mehasam lehacha, from the perspective of Bavel, they refer to Eretz Yisrael as Hasam, over there. And Hacha is Bavel. When you learn this in Eretz Yisrael, all the words are the reverse. Hasam is Eretz Yisrael and Hacha is Bavel. Yeah. So from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel it doesn't pata. Why is that? So the Gemara says, because the power of the Reish Galusa is stronger than the power of the Rosh HaSanhedrin. Taisus is bothered with a kasha that in the Gemara Mstach in the Perek Mokhm Shinogu, it talks about people who go temporarily from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, or people who go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael temporarily, about observing the Minhogim or the old Shitas that they observe where they came from. So the Gemara makes a distinction which direction you're going based on the assumption that in Eretz Yisrael they were on a higher level of learning than in Bavel. So in Eretz Yisrael they were on a higher level of learning than in Bavel. That's what it says in the Talmud Bavli. In Eretz Yisrael they were on a higher level of learning than in Bavel. So what does it mean over here that in Bavel the Reish Galusa is on a higher level than in Eretz Yisrael? So Tosfos says, what's the problem? The Rishka Lusa was not a learned individual. Not, sometimes they were learned, and most of the time they were not learned. Not supposed to be a Talmud Chacham. Not necessarily a Talmud Chacham. The Reish Golusa has power like a king. No, a king. So sometimes a righteous king, sometimes a learned king, and most of the time not righteous, not necessarily learned, Ganesh Meganesh. No. The Gemara Bayas is not talking who's more learned, the Gemara is talking who has more power. Dina the Malchusa Dina is more powerful than Hefke Bezna Hefke. Why is that? So the Dvar Avraham has the first tshuva in the first volume, very long tshuva, where he quotes the Rishonim on this daf on Hayom and Aleph, who seem to say that the power of the Bezdin to declare Hefke Bezna Hefker stems from the power, from the authority of the Melech. The rule really is Dina the Machusa Dina. The main rule is that the Melech has a right to be Mafke Mammon if he thinks that's necessary Lekiyum Hamdina. He has to make Takonis Letovis Hamdina, Melech Mishpat Yamed Eretz. It's the role of the king to maintain law and order in the land. If the Sanhedrin sees, if the Rabbanim see that the Melech is not doing his job, then the Rabbanim have a right to act as if they're the Melech. So that rule of Hefker Bezn Hefker is really a branch of the din of Dina the Malchusa Dina. The main din is Dina the Malchusa. And as a second, as an aspect, as a footnote to the Dina the Malchusa is that the Sanhedrin or the Bezdin, any Bezdin has a right to convene and to be Mafka Mam. So that's what the Gemara says, Mihacha Lehasam. If someone had Nitzilus Rishus from the Reish Galusa, and he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's going to be Potter there also, because the influence of the Melech is all over. Potter all over. But the Nasi Sheb Eretz Yisrael only has authority to be Mafka Mam in the confines of Eretz Yisrael. Once you leave to Bavel, and the Shlita of the Reish Galusa is more powerful than the power of the Bezdin falls apart. The Daily Mor is bothered with a question where Rav Chiya presented the two young men for smicha. So one was Rabbi Bar Chana, his two nephews, they were both. One was his brother's daughter, and one was his sister's brother's son, and one was his sister's son. So Rabbi Bar Chana got smicha same time as Rav. So the Gemara says they were both about to leave to Bavel. So if it means Natilus Rishus, the Gemara says it was both Natilus Rishus and Smicha. So if it's Natilus Rishus and Rebbe knows he's about to leave to Bavel, so then Natilus Rishus is not going to help. If he say Mihasam Lahacha, doesn't help. Natilus Rishus from the Nasi Shabaritza does not pater in Bavel, only paters if told Lo Yishamlo in Eretz Yisrael. So why did he bother to get the Natilus Rishus as he's about to leave Eretz Yisrael? It's just going to help for one day. Thinks he's going to make a mistake on the first day. He's just about to leave tomorrow. He's leaving to Bavel. So the Gemara says, "Bayaris hamdus al gvulin." The Natilus Rishus will help. What does that mean? Mean when you're deep into Bavel, where the shlita of the Reish Galusa is very powerful. So then you don't need the Nasi Sheberetz Yisrael to Balabatav over there. So then the Hefker Bezn Hefker Nashmar So. Doesn't take effect all the way in the middle of Bavel. But if it's a borderline area, Yaris Amdus al Gvulin, and the Shlita of the Reish Galusa is not obvious, so then the Shlita of the Nasi does work, and his Hefke Bezn Hefke will work. In other words, it's not cut off with the borders of Eretz Yisrael. You don't say, the Rosh HaSanhedrin, the Bezn Sheb Eretz Yisrael, their authority is only in Eretz Yisrael. Once it crossed over the border, finished. No, it's not a matter of borders. Why should it be restricted only to Eretz Yisrael? The shlita of the Nasi even applies in Bavel, in Chutz Loretz as well. And Bavel as well. But Kozman, you have a Reish Galusa. So wherever, whatever area the Reish Galusa is taken care of, so he's the Einoid Malvada. He's the sole Balabas over there, and you don't need any help from the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. But by Ayoras Amdus al Gvulin, where the shlita of the Reish Galusa is not that powerful, so then you say the Shlita of the Nasi is also good. The Shlita of the Rosh HaSanhedrin is also good. The Kesef Mishneh quoted this Gemara as a mocker, as a source for the problematic Rambam. The Gemara says later in the first Perek that the Mishneh lifts up all the various things that need a Bezin of 3, Bezin of 3, Bezin of 5, Bezin of 23, whatever. So it says Smicha Zekeinim. What does it mean, Smicha Zekeinim? So Rashi writes on the Mishnah, Smicha Zekeinim How many members of the Bez Nagodol do smicha v'samach yada rosh apar on the par helam dover shel tzibur? When the Bez Nagodol brings a korban chatos in order to be mechaper, in case they made a mistake in psak, in a matter with his koreis, and the rov hatzibur shebert tzol violated the aver based on the psak of the Bez Nagodol, so then you don't require of each and every individual person who is mechal shabbos or eitel chelim adam that he should bring a chatos. You have the Bez Nagodol bring the par helam dover shel tzibur, and everybody gets a kapara. So normally, when you have a korban tzibur, you don't have any smicha. The smicha can only be done by the bala korban. So when it's one person, so he does smicha. When it's a shutvim, so the Gemara has a whole discussion, how are you going to do, the Gemara says you can't, let's say two people decide they're going to bring a korban b'shutvus, a shlamim and all or whatever. They volunteer a korban b'shutvus. So the Gemara says, you can't have them do smicha b'vasachas, because you have to do smicha b'shtei yadayim. So you got to have four hands. How big is the whole head of the animal? You have to lean b'chol koichoi. So the whole head of the whole animal is not so big. There isn't enough room for everybody's hands. So you have first one guy will put his hands, then the next guy put his hands on top of the other guy's hand. Gemara says chatzitza. That's not acceptable. It's a problem of chatzitza. Why is it chatzitza? There should swim. What does it have to do with chatzitza? The answer is because if I could afford it, I would have brought the carbon without you. I don't need your shutfis in halacha. You don't need me either. It's just that monetarily, it's too expensive. So we decided to join together. So I'm really an independent bialim without you. You're an independent bialim without me. So that's why the halacha says that your hands are a chatzitza and my hands are a chatzitza for you. Your hands are a chatzitza for me. So we can't do smicha bevasacha. So the question is, okay, to have each one of the shutzim, have each one of the chabur, you have a whole chabur bringing the korban, have each one of the chabur do smicha. So the Gemara says that, you got to do bezeh chazeh. You have to do one after the other. The Gemara says tenufa is the same problem. When you do tenufas chaz b'shok an shlamim, is vaita the same problem. Yodav to Vienna, is isha Hashem. The bala korban has to hold it in his hand, and he has to take off his gloves, and he can't hold it in a basket or on a plate. You have to hold the flesh mamish in your hand, and if you're going to have both shutim holding at the same time, it's going to be a chatzitza. So there we have a special pasuk that if you're going to have Zach HaZeh, then you're going to have two tenufas, and we have a pasuk that you can't have two tenufas. So there we say, we pick one of the shutzim, and it says, Echad Meinef, Ayidei Kulam. One does tenufa, and all the other partners are yotzeh. But by smicha, you don't have a gzeres HaKosev that says only one can do smicha. So each one of the shutzim will do smicha, Zach HaZeh. They can't do it at the same time. So normally, on a carbon seabird, the Mishnah says, normally on a carbon tzibur you don't do any smicha, because the carbon tzibur, the bala carbon, is the klal Yisrael, the tzibur. How are you going to have smicha? What, the whole klal Yisrael is going to come and do smicha? It's unreasonable. So the Mishnah lists off a machlekes hatanami, the three or four carbonist tzibur that do have smicha. So one of them is par helam dover shel tzibur, that it says beferish in the chumash. The Bez Nagodol chooses three or five members of the Bez Nagodol who are going to serve as representatives of the whole klal Yisrael, and they're going to do smicha for everybody. So that's what the Mishnah says, the machlekes is Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, where the smichas zikainim is b'shloisha, a smichas zikainim is b'chamisha. How many members of the Bez Nagodol do you need to do the smicha? Fine. So the Gemara says later, in the first perek, we have a brisa that requires a bezdin of three, both for smicha and for smicha zikainim. What do you mean? Smicha and smicha zikainim, it's the same thing. Gemara says no. One of them means smichan and the parhal dover shel tzibur, and one means conferring ordination, rabbinical ordination. When you declare the person should be a rabbi, so you got to have a bezin of three. The man is there. We don't really have any smicha. So the Gemara says over there that kicks off the whole sugya of smicha. The Gemara says smicha can only be conferred in Eretz Yisrael. Asher Rabbeinu gave smicha and chutz lo'ed to Yishuv and nun to the shivim skenim. That was kodem shenivchara Eretz Yisrael before they crossed over the Yarden. So you can no longer confer any smicha in chutzlar. So the Gemara says the smicha doesn't have to be zeh b'fnei zeh, it can be zeh shelo b'fnei zeh, but they both have to be in Eretz Yisrael. The masmich with the samuch, the one is conferring the smicha, one is receiving the smicha, both have to be in Eretz Yisrael. That's already many, many generations that we don't have any smicha. Even the smicha in Eretz Yisrael is no longer rishmi p'yishad Moshe Rabbeinu from smicha, from people who themselves got smicha in Eretz Yisrael. So what do we have? What kind of an imitation smicha do we have? What is it all about? So the Ramon Yeridei in Hilchas Talmud Torah quotes the Abarbanel that the smicha that we have today is only imitation smicha to satisfy the Takonas Chachamim that appears on Hamid Beis Talmud al Yore Elam Kein Notol Rishus Mei Rabbi. A person who knows how to learn shouldn't patkin, and other Rishayim say shouldn't be a teacher, al Yore, shouldn't be a more, shouldn't be a more. Either a more or a shouldn't be a poisik, or he shouldn't teach in a school, unless Notol Rishus Mei Rabbi. And when they give him Rishus, the Gemara says they have to check two things. They have to check that he knows how to learn, to make sure he's not going to make mistakes. They have to check that he knows how to present, he knows how to speak properly. If he talks in circles, or he mispronounces words, or he has a bad diction, or he has a foreign accent, so then it's no good. I remember once I was visiting in a shul, and the rabbi was from South Africa, and he was speaking in English. So one of the women said to the other, "Doesn't the rabbi speak such a beautiful Yiddish?" She didn't even know that he was talking. The rabbi didn't know Yiddish. She didn't even know that he was talking English. This was in America. She didn't know he was talking English. So if the rabbi is going to teach, either doesn't know the dinim, or has a poor diction, or has a foreign accent, a heavy foreign accent that's going to throw people off, and they won't understand what he's talking about, so you're not supposed to give rishus. Not only do you Rashi points it out on the Gemara, on Hamad Beis, not only do you have to check to make sure that the person knows how to learn before you give him rishus, you have to check that he knows how to speak properly and clearly and to pronounce the words accurately. That the listeners shouldn't make a mistake. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramban, Shulchan Aruch quotes the Abar Ben Elul, that the man is there, the smicha is only imitation, smicha to satisfy this takanam of the Ramban, and tell him all your MK, not to be shoes me, Rabbi. So the man is there, you don't need a bezna of three anymore. Very often they try to make it, called the Tikkun Rabban came there, right? Tikkun, so very often they try to have it that three people will give the smicha. Even the yeshiva for years used to have three rabbanim. Used to give the bechina to the students, and then used to be Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Shatzkis and Dr. Belkin. So they used to, if I had the talmidim, and all three of them would sign the smicha. But it's not halacha bizmanazeh, you don't need, it's not a real smicha bizmanazeh. If you would have smicha in Eretz Yisrael, Yishmashiach, Moshe Rabbeinu, the real McCoy, then it's a din l'gmar, you need smicha b'shlosh. But bizman is there, it's a different halacha. Talmud al yerim kenotah b'shus mei rabba, and the rabbi has to give him the sniff. So the Rambam quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi that smicha can be given l'dvarim yechidim. The Gemara has it over here, hey, on the base, but the Gemara is pshita l'pal gahakama de mahani, because they gave Rav Netilas Rishus, Yore and Yodin, but Lo Yata Becheres. So in the Bavli, it's presented on Hail Medal of Hamad Beis that this wasn't, it's not really presented in the context of Smith, it's presented in the context of Netilas Rishus. So the Gemara says Netilas Rishus Lachatzoin is good. The Rishalmi tells over the same story and says that it was Smicha, and contained within the Smicha is automatically Netilas Rishus told Lo Yishamu also. So the Yerushalmi says that you see from this story that you can give smicha l'dvar mechidim. You don't have to, it's not either all or nothing. Either he has smicha for kol ha'tar kula, he doesn't get smicha at all. No, there's such a thing is lepalga, there's smicha l'hatsayim. They give him smicha in hilchus netilas yedan. They give him smicha in hilchus kiddush and abdola. And the rest of, they give only smicha in yaradei chelek aleph to the exclusion of everything else. So there is such a thing as smicha l'dvar mechidim. So the Rambam quotes the din from the Gemara later that you can give smicha only in Eretz Yisrael. Then the Rambam raises an issue: the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz only apply in Eretz Yisrael. That's mekudesh is b'kedushas ha'aretz. There were sections in Eretz Yisrael that were kavshim olei Mitzrayim v'lo kavshim olei Bavel. That the first time around in the days of Yeshua ben Nun they conquered in the shevish kavshim and the shevish hilku. They conquered all the area. David HaMelech conquered more. And ladies, David HaMelech conquered more areas in Eretz Yisrael. So there were areas that were Niskatshu B'Kedusha Rishayna. And whenever Niskatshu B'Kedusha Shniyah, because we assume that the Kedusha Rishayna was Batla when the Beit HaMikdash was Chorev and all Bnei Yisrael went into Golas Bavel at the Churban time, Churban Bais Rishon. So then when Ezra and Nehemiah came back the second time to build the Bais Rishon, they had to be Mekadosh Eretz Yisrael anew. So the Gemara says, Harbe Krachin, there were many villages, Kovshal and Mitzrayim. And all the Mitzrayim in the days of Yishuv Benun were Mekadosh, were lo kavshim olei bovel. The hinichum, they, on purpose, they left them and they intended Bedavka not to be Mekadosh them. It was up to them to decide whether yes or no. So they decided for political reasons not to be Mekadosh them. The Gemara says in Yevamos and Achulim and other places, Kedei sheyismuchu aleihem aniyim b'shviyus. Because Shemitah is going to pose a real problem. Every 7 years comes Shemitah, nobody has any food. So if they're going to be Mekadosh, the whole Eretz Yisrael that was in Mekadosh the first time around, so all of Eretz Yisrael will have Kedushas Haaretz when it gets to Shemitah. So they left out a big area, Harbe Krachim, they left out a big area, so that the laws of Shemitah won't apply there, and the poor people will have a job. The rich people, some will have money in their bank accounts, so they'll be able to live off of their savings from the past. But the poor people live daily, whatever job they have, so they make a few dollars, so they use that money. So what are they going to do in Shemitah? They're going to starve to death. They have no money saved up in a savings account. So they left out half of Eretz Yisrael should not be endowed with Kedusha Saritz the second time around, in order that the laws of Shemitah shouldn't apply, in order that the poor people will have a place to make money. They'll have a job there to work on those farms during the Shnas HaShemitah. So the Gemara says, B'negeh to the mitzvah Satoyis Baretz, in those areas which had a Kedusha Rishon and never got a Kedusha Shniyo, so the laws of Trumas and Maisis don't apply Min HaTorah. They may or may not apply Min HaRabbanan, but Min HaTorah they don't apply. Because it's chutz l'aretz. So the Rambam writes a chiddush that he writes that there are two dinim that depend on Eretz Yisrael. Namely, one din is smicha, can only be conferred in Eretz Yisrael. The other din is egla rufa. Egla rufa only applies ki matzi cholo bo adoma asher Hashem lakech nosen lechol lishvatecho lerishto. If you find a dead body who is obviously murdered by somebody, you find the guy has a heart attack, you don't bring in egla rufa. But if you find the person who was obviously murdered, cholo means he was murdered, then you measure to the cities that are closest to the cholo. And the Mishnah says that you don't measure to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim ain't even via egla rufa, because Yerushalayim is run with kalka l'shvatim. You're only chayiv in egla rufa if you're in number one in Eretz Yisrael, and the city was in kalka l'shvatim. So chutz l'aretz is upgiret, there's nothing to discuss. Of course it's learned as Chalka L'Shvatim. It's not superior to Yerushalayim. So in Chutz L'Aretz there's no din of Egla Rufa. Even if the Jews are Borough Park, whatever, even if the Jews took over the whole area, there's no mitzvah of Egla Rufa. So the Rambam writes that this din of Egla Rufa applies only in Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael with the borders of the Madura Rishonah, with the first time around. Whatever had Kedusha Rishonah in the days of Olam Mitzrayim, you can bring an Egla Rufa. Whatever had Kedusha Rishonah, you're able to confer Smicha there. So the question is twofold. Why should it be so? And where did the Rambam get this idea from? Usually the Rambam, if it's an original idea, should have said Yeroyali. The Rambam writes Yeroyali even on things that are Kemat B'Ferish and Mishnayis. They write it in one place is Masig on the Rambam and Hilchas Macholos Asuras. Why did he write Yeroyali? It's a B'Ferish and Mishnah. So the Mefarshim explain it's not 100% the Beferish. It's 98% the Beferish. Because it's not 100% the Beferish, so the Rambam wrote Yeroyali. So this, where does this appear? That with respect to Egel Arufam, with respect to Smicha, we say that everything depends on the Kedusha Rishayna, even though the second time around, this area in Eretz Yisrael was never in Kaddish. So the Kesef Mishnah claims that the source is this Gemara, Ayar Samnes Al Agvul. That's not the way. The Pashup Shat in Gemara is not at all like the Kesef Mishnah. Pashup Shat, first of all, is that the Gemara, the Bavli, is not talking about Smicha, it's talking about Netilus Rishus and Tola Yishalma. And secondly, the Pashtus and Ayar Samnes Al Agvul is, once you pass the border of Eretz Yisrael into Chutzal Oretz, even though we said earlier that Mehasam Lahacha, the Rishus, Mentilus Rishus from the Rosh HaSanhedrin does not help in Chutz L'Aretz, that means deep in the middle of Bavel it doesn't help, because the Reish Galus is taking care of everything, it doesn't need any outside help. The only time the Sanhedrin has a right to use their trick of Hefkebez and Hefker is if the Melech is not taking care of the matters. But if the Melech, the Reish Galus is taking care of everything in the middle of Bavel, then you don't need any help of the Nasi Sheberetz Yisrael. And he has no authority to make Hefke Bez Hefke. But on the Ayar Samnes Al Agvulin, even though it's Chutz La'aretz, it's not, strictly speaking, it's not Eretz Yisrael, it's Chutz La'aretz, but since the Shlita of the Reish Galusa is not so powerful there, so he could use a little help from the Nasi Shib Eretz Yisrael also. That's the Pashup Shat in Gemara. So Ayar Samnes Al Agvulin is not talking about areas within Eretz Yisrael that had a Kedusha Rishon and didn't have a Kedusha Shni. So the Kesef Mishnah says, this is the marker for the Rambam, that's why he didn't write Yeroyali. because the Rambam understood that he's quoting it straight from the Gemara. Alright, Zalzain, that's the Mokker. Zalzain, that's the Mokker. What's the Biur? How do you explain this? Why should it depend on Kedusha Rishayna if we pass in Lalocha that the Kedusha Rishayna was like Kitchelot Elohe, it was Butla? You have to come on to the Kedusha Shnir. And the Kedusha Shnir, they left out. Harbi Krachim were left out the second time around. So the Noise Kelim on the side of the Rambam, the Radvaz on the side of the Rambam, refers you to the Sefer Kafta Vaferach, which is by one of the Rishonim who moved from Europe to Eretz Yisrael. And he writes all about the borders of Eretz Yisrael and what about the special dinim that apply in Eretz Yisrael, Trumas and Maisus and Lekat Shik Kampeya and Shmita V'Yovel and Yontem Sheni and all the dinim, everything that's relevant to Eretz Yisrael, and about the possibility of bringing Korbanos B'zman HaZeh. He heard that an earlier generation wanted to bring Korbanos, doesn't understand it, and then he does explain it, what it's all about. And he writes about all the inyonim of Eretz Yisrael. So in that sefer, Kafta V'Ferah, he points out that there are two different aspects to Eretz Yisrael. One aspect is Kedushas HaOretz with respect to the agricultural mitzvahs. That the Chovas Karka, the mitzvahs of Tluyas Baruch, only apply in Eretz Yisrael. But then there are other miscellaneous dinim that depend on Eretz Yisrael. And it's not really a function of mitzvahs of Tluyas Baruch, that smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam says that Kiddush HaChodesh, the Gemara says Kiddush HaChodesh can only be done in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam explained in the Sefer HaMitzvah the reason why, because the Kiddush HaChodesh has to be done by the Klal Yisrael. The Bez is not supposed to represent Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is only in Eretz Yisrael. That's probably the Hezber. That's what the Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishnah. It's also on the Smicha in Bechoris on Daf Kof Tes. The Rambam says, why is it that you can't confer Smicha in Chutz Lartz? So he says, because Smicha is an Indian of the Klal Yisrael conferring the Smicha. The three members of the Bezin who are giving the smicha is not that it's a private affair on their own. They're doing it as representatives of all of Klal Yisrael. So they can only represent Klal Yisrael if they're acting in Eretz Yisrael. Chutz Lo'ez they can. The Rambam says, where do I get this idea from? To explain the din of the Gemara, he says, because by Par Halam Dovashal Tzibur, the Gemara states in Hurrius that you won't, the Bez Nagol only brings this Par Halam Dovashal Tzibur if the Rov HaTzibur Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael violate this aver based on the Pesach of Bez Nagor. Why does it depend on Yoshvi Eretz Yisrael? The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Malachim that when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, it was called Dol Milavoy Chamos Ad Nacha Mitzrayim. And the concept of Kohol, we see from that pasuk, Kohol, Klal Yisrael only applies to those who live in Eretz Yisrael. Those who live in Chutz Lo'ez are not part of Klal Yisrael. The Jewish, the Chayv Mitzvahs, you can't use them as Yishabbos Goy, they have to observe all the mitzvahs of Torah. But they're not part of Klal Yisrael. The Klal Yisrael is only the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael. So it seems that the Rambam puts all these dinim together. Smicha with Par Halam Dovashal Tzibur can only be in Eretz Yisrael, with Kiddush HaChodesh, with Egla Rufa. And then you have the Tesis in the beginning of Psochim, writes a Kiddush that the Mishlam Melech says he doesn't know where Tesis got it from. Tesis writes, those who don't live in Eretz Yisrael, those who live in Chutz Lo'ez, are not obligated to go for Pesach. The Gemara says they're not obligated to be Oyla Rega. That's what it says. Because it says in the Chumash Vayikra, in Dvarim, when you go to be Oyla Rega, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that Shluchim Mitzvah Einim Nizokim. So the Pasuk promises, Valayach Menishas Artscha Baloscha Leiroi. When you go to visit the Beis HaMikdash, no one will steal away Eretz Yisrael from under your hand. So the Gemara understands from that Pasuk that only those who live in Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah promises, Valayach Menishas Artscha, they're mechuyif to be Oyla Rega. Whoever lives in Chutz Lo'ez, so there's no issue of Liach Manishis Artzucha, they're not mechuyif to be Oyla Rega. But the Gemara never said that you're not chayvin Korban Pesach. So the printers of the Gemara thought that the Tesis was so schwer, so they printed on the side of that Tesis to look in the Mishlah Melech, Shehiniach Dibra Tesis Betema. But the Mishlah Melech says he doesn't know where Tesis got it from. So the latest farm, right, it's an often a Yerushalmi, that those who live in Eretz Yisrael are not obligated to participate in Korban Pesach. And the Shalmi even says not obligated to bring Oilos Riyah, Shalmi Chagiga. Okay. Basically, that's the same as what the Bavli says, that those who live in Chutz Lo'ez are not mechuyev in Aliyah LaRegel. So even if they want to come, they're not mechuyev to give Oilos Riyah and Shalmi Chagiga. So, but the Shalmi gives the reason why. It doesn't just say Le'ach Menishis Artzachad. The Shalmi says because Korban Pesach is considered a Korban HaTzibur. It says in the Gemara and the Bavli also, that's the Gemara in Yuma. Korban Pesach is considered a Korban Sibur, even though each person pays for it by himself. And usually the way to determine whether any given korban is a korban yochid or a korban tzibur is who pays for it. If it's paid for by private funds, then it's a korban yochid. If it's purchased from machzah shekel money, then it's a korban tzibur. So the korban pesach is paid for by people's private funds. So that should really be a korban yochid. It shouldn't really be considered a korban tzibur. So the Gemara says in Yumen, in the middle of Yumen, the Gemara says, since it's osi b'chenufyo, since everybody brings the Korban Pesach on the same day, masses and masses, millions of people come to bring the Korban Pesach on the same day, it's all, everybody brings together, osi b'chenufyo, so that's why we label it as a Korban Tzibur, despite the fact that it's not paid for, it's not funded with machzah shekel money. And the same, the Yerushalmi says, is true regarding Chagiga, regarding Oil Asri and Shalmi Chagiga. Even though it's paid for by private money, but everybody comes on Sholosh HaGolam, on Pesach Shavuos Sukkos, throngs of people come to bring Oil Asri and Shalmi Chagiga. So because it's also B'chanufio, so therefore it's considered a Korban Tzibur. So all of these dinim only apply in Eretz Yisrael. All of these dinim only apply in Eretz Yisrael. So that's a shaila. These are not agricultural mitzvahs. It's not a chayvus karka. So why should they apply only Eretz Yisrael? So the Rambam explained why, based on the Gemara and Horius, that whenever it's a mitzvah of tzibur, so the full concept of tzibur only applies to those who are toshavi Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the mitzaref of all of Klal Yisrael. So the Rambam understands in our Gemara, Yoris Amnes Alagvulim, the areas that had a Kedusha Rishayna and never were endowed with the Kedusha Shniyah, so true, they don't have Kedusha Sa'aret, and therefore the mitzvahs, at least as far as agricultural mitzvahs, will not apply there, at least in our Torah, for sure not. But these are, here we're not talking about agricultural mitzvahs, here we're just talking about, is it part of Eretz Yisrael that serves as the mitzaref of Klal Yisrael? So that the Rambam understood in Gemara, yes, Ayoris Amdus Alagvulin, if it's on the outskirts of Eretz, if it's part of Eretz Yisrael, what was Eretz Yisrael the first time around, in the Kedusha Rishayna, even though I never got a Kedusha Shniya, but still, that's enough of Eretz Yisrael to be Mitzaref Klal Yisrael together. So that's all you need for smicha. You don't need to confer the smicha in that part of Eretz Yisrael that has Kedusha Sa'aretz. Why? The guy's getting smicha as a farmer. The farming mitzvahs only apply. The mitzvahs for the farmers are restricted only to Eretz Yisrael, which is Mekudeshes B'Kedusha Sa'aretz. Here we're not talking about the mitzvahs of Klal Yisrael. We're not talking about Chodesh Karka. We're talking about the mitzaref of Klal Yisrael, so that even the areas that had the Kedusha Rishon and never had a Kedusha Shniya are also serve as a mitzaref, and then you'll have the smicha there will be minatur. This is how the Kesem Mishnah understood the Rambam, that the mocker for this Rambam, that you can confer smicha in those areas where there's Kedusha Rishon, even though there was no Kedusha Shniya, he claims the mocker is from this Gemara. Ayaris Amnes Alagvul. Shvacha mocker. It must be some better mock. It must be an offer in a Yerushalmi or something. Is there really any Gemara? It doesn't say. Ayaris Amnes goes on Chutzlor. It doesn't really. It goes on that part of Bavel that wasn't the center of Bavel. But it doesn't go on the outskirts of Eretz Yisrael. I'll be Pashtus. In Shulchan Aruch Yerideye, there's a siman about Hilchas Talmud Torah and Hilchas Hayru Asisa Veheta. How are you supposed to pass Mashal? Who has a right to Paskin? Who doesn't have a right to Paskin, and whom do the Balabatim have to follow? If you have a Machlokes among the Rabbanim, whom are the Balabatim supposed to follow? So one of the rules and regulations that they have in Shulchan Aruch runs as follows. The Mechaber quotes this, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Misho Emer, that a Moira Haro is not allowed to issue a Psak Lahokel if it's going to be Tamu al Rabbim. If the Balabatim will think that he's off his mind. They're not allowed to issue a psak hatamu al rabim if it's lahakam. So what is the source for this? So here it says in the Gemara, that's what the Noisa Kalim say on the Shulchan Aruch, the source is this Gemara Hamad Beis, about 8 lines from the top. The Gemara asked the question on the second line from the top. My timer, why didn't Rabbi Yudah Anasi give the full smicha, the full Natilus Rishus to Rav, even with respect to Yata Becheres? He gave Rabba Bar Chona, got Yata Becheres, got all three, Yore, Yod, and Yata Becheres, and Rav didn't get Yata Becheres. So the Gemara says, should I assume that he wasn't so learned, he didn't know the dinim? The Gemara says, no, Rav was much bigger than Rabba Bar Chona. Historically, we heard of Rav, everybody heard, who heard of Rabba Bar Chona? Not such a famous figure. Rabba Bar Bar Chona is a famous, and they called him an idiot. They called Rabba Bar Chona a sichse. They called him a shaita, a mora. But Rabbi Bar Chana is basically an unknown figure. He's not as famous at all as Rav. So Rav is bigger in learning. So the Gemara says, well, maybe he can learn, maybe he can be very, very learned, but he has to know biology. In order to know what's a mum kavu, what's a mum mayim, you have to know a lot of biology. Maybe he never went to medical school, so he does know the biology. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? He spent 18 months on a farm. Shmoyna asa chadoshim godalti etzel red v'hem v'lei deiz a mum kavu v'eiz a mum mayver. He spent a year and a half. Wow. A year and a half on a farm to learn what's a mum kavu or what's a mum mayver. You see that there's an inyan in knowing this, not just in knowing in abstract what the dinim are. There's an inyan in knowing mamish the metzias. That's why the Vilna Gaon wanted very much to go to Italy, to go to medical school. He wanted to know all the chachmas olam, because he understood that to the extent that you'll be lacking in any of the chachmas olam, to the extent that it'll be lacking in medicine, they won't fully appreciate, he won't fully understand Hilchos Treifos. To the extent you're lacking in physics, you won't be able to paskin in Hilchos Shabbos, a lot of these new devices. To the extent that you're lacking chemistry, a lot of times can't paskin in Kashrus. You have to understand, even if you don't know chemistry, somebody has to explain to you certain aspects of chemistry. I remember sometimes they had explained to me 5 times till I understood what was going on, so before you can take a stand on certain issues of Kashrus. So the Goyen wanted to go. That's what it says in the Hagadama to the Pas HaShulchan. But the Talmud of the Gro wrote this. He writes over the story. He heard that the Gro wanted to go to Italy to study medicine, and his father wouldn't let him. His father held that if he's going to go to Italy, he'll become the world's biggest doctor. He was a genius, and that'll be mechuyav to treat all the patients, and he won't have any time to learn and to pass Mishaila. So his father didn't let him. But you see that Rav did it. Rav spent a year and a half on a farm in order to learn what's a mum kavu, what's a mum mayur. So not only did he know the halacha, he knew the biology also. So why didn't he get the yatzah b'chayres? So the Gemara suggests, one suggestion is, Mishum ha'gufet, the rabbi kiyah b'mum mitzveh, he was such an expert. There were a lot of things that the hamoinam wouldn't realize is a mum kavua. And Rav was such an expert, he would be able to tell that's a mum kavua. And his psakim would be misleading. A talmid chacham is not allowed to give a psak, even if it's 100% correct, if he thinks that it may be misleading. Very often, you give a psak hatamu ala rabin, or you give a psak with a condition. It's only mutra on these conditions, so the condition will be forgotten very soon. Before the guy walks home, the condition will be forgotten. Very hard, it's not smart to give a psak, a heter, on a condition, because the condition will be forgotten. So that's what the Gemara says over here. You're not allowed to give a psak hatamu ala rabin, because it's a lifnei evil esita mikshol, because the public will misapply the psak. He said that one thing is mutter, and the hamayinam will be medama milsa la milsa, because they don't know biology the way he knows. Sometimes you have halacha bein morin ken, because it's a machloikis what the din should be. So we want to be machmir for the other opinion. Here it's halacha bein morin ken, because we're afraid of Lifneiva, we're afraid that it'll be misunderstood by the Hamoina, and it'll cause kilkulim. So you're not allowed to issue a kula if it'll cause kilkulim. This is quoted in Yeridayim. So then the Gemara tells the whole story. Where did this takana come from? Talmud al Yom Kein Nota Bishus Mei Rabba. Why did they institute that takana? Because on one occasion, Holach Rebbe Lamokam Echod, Rebbe went to a certain city, Ro, Shemigablim Isosehem Betuma. The din is that food is only Mekabel Tuma, Mashkim on Mekabel Tuma, even without any Hefshir. Mashkim Alulim Lekabel Tuma, Mashkim are more susceptible to Kabbalah's Tuma, the Gemara says, Misokim, than Mekabel Tuma, even without any Hefshir. But Ochlim, if you have flesh, or fish, or vegetables, fruits, whatever, is not mekabel tumah unless it has hechshamayim, unless you pour it on one of the zayin mashkim. Let's say an animal while it's alive sometimes walks into a river, walks out of the river, but that's not called, or the apples while they're growing on the tree, a lot of rain pours on the apples, but the hechsher echem doesn't help while it's still mechubel lekarka, and the hechsher echem doesn't help while the fish are alive, and it doesn't help while the animal is alive. It has to be, after you shech the animal, then you have to have the hechsher. The Mishnah says in Chulin that it just so happens that one of the things that's Makshal HaKabal Tumah is Dam Behema. And when you shecht an animal by the neck, unless you choke it to death, but if you shecht an animal by the neck, so the neck is going to be full of blood, and that's makshel lekabel tuma. So every animal that was geshochten is automatically going to be hokshel lekabel tuma. Because you don't have to pour water on the whole thing on all the mikolat garb. If you just tap on one side, that's called the hechshazon. Let's say you have an apple, you just washed off one side of the apple. So it's also called hechshazon. You have to wash off the whole surface of the apple. So here also the Mishnah says when you shecht the behemoth, so Mishnah chulin, when you shecht the behemoth, it always the flesh of the behemoth while the animal is alive, it's not mekabel hechshazon. But after the animal is dead, when you shecht it, now it's considered dead, even though it's jumping around a little bit. Once the head is severed, it's dead. Brain dead. Okay, brain dead. So then the Mishnah says, once the Hutaz Rosha is dead, so once it's dead, and then the neck is full of blood, so that's the Heksha. So the Balabatim knew the basic dinim, that if you have flour, if you have wheat that grows in the ground, and then it comes up and it rains on it and everything, it's not Hukshu L'Kabel Tumah. It has to be rinsed off, the wheat has to be rinsed off after it's detached from the ground. So our wheat is always rinsed off after. We have bleached. Or bleached wheat is clean flour. But bleached flour is a modern thing from the 1500s. Years ago, they used to do lesisa in the Beis HaMikdash. They used to bleach all of the wheat before they made menachas from it, that it should be clean, that the menachas should be min amufra. But the menachas, there's an iser. You're not allowed to let the mincha turn into chametz. So weren't they concerned if they're going to bleach the grain for menachas? Maybe it'll become chametzdik, and they'll be in violation of the din of bringing a gekar mincha that's chametzdik. So the Gemara says in Sochem Daf Mem Amin Aleph, you don't have to worry. In the Beis Hamikdash, the Bez Nagoro was on top of everybody, and they made everybody crazy. And the Kohanim are going to be very careful, though they're going to get fired. They're going to kick them out. So the Bez Nagoro is going to supervise it. You don't have to worry. But the Shaila is, what about the Balabas? The plain Balabas is going to do lesisa on his own private grain, not under the supervision of the Bez Nagoro. He's going to do lesisa on his own private grain that he's going to use for Pesach. He's going to bleach his grain in order that he's going to have clean matzahs. He doesn't want to have dirty matzahs. Let's have clean matzahs to wash off the dirt. So the Gemara Himsachim and Daf Mem has a three-way machlekes hatanoim. Here the Gemara refers to part of it. One Amaroim, not tanoim. One Amaroim says, Osa lilto, you're not allowed to bleach the grain because you may not be careful and it may turn into chametz. So we don't permit you to be losers. The other Tana, the other Amora says, Muto liltos, but it's not necessary. We allow you, if you want to have clean matzahs, we allow you to wash them off, provided that you'll be careful that you should remove all of the moisture immediately. You shouldn't let it sit and soak in the water, or it's going to turn to hummus. And the third opinion of the Amora is that it's a mitzvah liltos. Other Abbot's a mitzvah. Why is it a mitzvah? Because the matzahs have to be shmurah. What's the definition of shmura? You have to put it in contact with water and protect it from turning into chametz. If you're going to keep it away from the water, so you're not running any risk, so that's not shmura. Shmura means you lead a risky life and you survive. That's called shmura. So that's one opinion. The third opinion of the Gemara: mitzvah liltos, bedafkin. Mitzvah liltos, in order to it should have the possibility of becoming chametz, and you should save it the last minute, that it shouldn't become chametz, so then you have real shmura matzah. That's real mahadran, real shmura matzah. So the Gemara tells a part of this story. One of the Talmidim came to a community, said, Mutar liltos, chitam et pesach, it's permissible, that's one of the three shitas. Mutar, mitzvah, osam, the three opinions. So then they told this fellow, hey young man, there's a rabbi in this community, why are you fasting shas? He says, I didn't realize it, and he withdraws his psak. That Derech Agav, the Gemara has that. But the Gemara tells the first story. The first story they tell was that they came to a community where the Balabatim were mixing the flour with the water all year long. In that case, mixing flour with water in order to bake. And they were mixing this in the Talmidic Kli, and their hands, everything was tamei. And they knew the din that if the flour doesn't come in contact with water, then it's not mekabel tumah. If the flour comes in contact with anyone in the zayin mashkim liyad shach adam, then it's hukshel lekabel tumah. It'll become tamei. They know that it's not proper to be mitame food in Eretz Yisrael. Proper thing is to have everything that's tohor should remain in the state of Tahara, but they used to mix it with water from May Beitzin. What happened over here? They used to mix it with water from May Bitsoim, water from swamps, swampy water. It's probably unhealthy. So in the summer they cooked the water. Okay, they used to use water from a swamp. So where'd they get this from? That only rainwater, only flowing water from a river is makshel lekabel tumah. And if it's water from Bitsoim, from a swamp, it's not mekabel tumah. Where did they get that from? So a Talmid once came to their community who didn't have a good diction, and he couldn't pronounce Hebrew well, and maybe he had a South African accent. Mm-hmm. He didn't know exactly what language he was speaking. So he told them, May Beitzim, Eino makshim lekabel tumah. May Beitzim is correct. That's not makshel lekabel tumah, because it's not from the Zayin Mashkin, it's not from the Yad Shoch Adam. And they misunderstood. They thought that it's maybe Tzoyim. Then the Balabatim, Balabatim like to learn Mishnayis. Yeshivi guys learn Gemara. They don't know they don't know Mishnayis. They don't know Tanakh. Balabatim think they know Mishnayis, but they know they don't know Gemara. So then after the Talmud came, they found the Mishnah. One find that they're learning Mishnayis, which Mishnayis Paro of all the Mishnayis. They're going straight, so they learn Paro. So they thought they found it off in the Mishnah that says like the Talmud. Oh, so the Ferish Mishnah. It says in the Mishnah that water from a swamp cannot be used for the par aduma. May karmi and may fig of psulim and shame may bitsoim. You see that may bitsoim, water from the swamp, has a different status. Of course it has a different status. It says you have to have mine chaim el keli. When you have par aduma, so you take a par aduma, you shecht it, you burn it, you sprinkle the dam towards the Beis HaMikdash shrine, then you burn it, and after you burn it, you hold on to the ashes, and you take a speck of ashes, you mix it into a container full of water. You have thousands and thousands of barrels of water, and you put in a tiny speck. The smaller the speck of ashes that you put in, so the more barrels of paraduma water you're going to have. You want to have a lot. You want it to last for a long time. If you use up all the ashes from the paraduma, you've got to make yourself another paraduma. It's expensive to get a paraduma. Mara tells that they paid a fortune to Doma Ben Asina, the goy, when he had a paraduma, was born to Islam. So you put in a speck of ashes. So the din says that you have to have mayim chayim in a kli, and then you pour in the ashes from the par aduma. It has to be mayim chayim. So the Mishnah, what does mayim chayim mean? Mayim from a mayon, as opposed to mayim from megishamim or mei neharis. The Torah has mayim chayim has a special status. If a person is tamei, so he has to be tovel and mikvah in order to become tohar. So the pasuk says, "Ach mayin aboy mikvah mayin yihi tohar." There are two ways to remove the tumah: either if you tovel in a mayon, or if you tovel in a mikvah. Ach mayon, or mikvah mayin yihi tohar. If you tovel in A or B, you will become tohar. Is there anybody who has to dafka be tovel in a mayon? That a mikvah is no good. A mikvah means you have 40 saw of rainwater that's beheshbarin. It's in a shever in the ground. You have a crack in the ground and the water is stagnant. That's what the word mikveh. Mikveh means you kabel hamayim l'mokam echod. The water is kabel v'kaim with stagnant water. That's a mikveh. And a mayon means the reverse, that the water is coming from under the ground sources and it's flowing and it's moving. So that's called mayon. Mayim chayim. It's moving. It keeps on moving. That's mayim chayim. And megishamim, if it's from rainwater, then if you have rainwater that's flowing, then it's no good. Or let's say you have the mountains have snow, and then when it comes to springtime, the snow starts to melt from the warm sun. So the water that's rolling down the mountain is called the hardalis, the water rolling down the sides of the mountain. So that's no good, because that's rainwater, and rainwater is only metaher if it's beishbarin. If it's bezoichel and it's absul derais, it's no good. And if it's a mayon, so it's punktfakir, it's just the reverse. And normally, the Torah says you have an option. Either a tamei can be tovel in a mikvah, a tamei can be tovel in a mayon. The Chumash tells you that there's one tamei who requires dafke mayon, a zav, a man who has tumaziv or a zav. It says, Rachet says, Psora b'mayim chayim. If he's tovel in a mikvah, he's just his tamei after as he was before. He can only gain tahara if he's tovel in a mayon. And that's a question, Taka and Rashi later in Sanhedrin. What about a zavah? Does the Zava also need Mayim Chayim? But he's saying, no, the only one who needs Mayim Chaim is a Zav, because a Zav and a Zav are not the same thing. It's not that this is a male and this is a female. A Zav is a male and a Zav is a female, but there's much more difference there. They're totally different things. They have nothing to do with each other. So there was an opinion in the days of the Gaonim that just like a Zav requires Mayim Chaim, that's a Pasuk in Chumash, so the Zav also needs Mayim Chaim. So that's going to pose big problems, because we have a Chumrah, the Nashi Dizan, Azavas Nina. We have a Chumrah, the Gemara says, Rebbe, Rabbi Yudan Asa, made a takana, that you treat all the women as if the Suffolk need the Suffolk Zava. So if the women are Suffolk Zava, so everybody has to be Tevel in a mikveh. None of the women can be Tevel in a Mayon. So some Taken Mansi, some of Sidim have Mayonas for the women to be Tevel. But in Washington Heights, we don't have a Mayon. Most places in the world, they don't have a Mayon. They have a mikveh, they don't have a Mayon. Mayon is more expensive to have. So we hold that that's a mistake. Rashi quotes this from the Goinim a few times in the Gemara. So half the time he quotes it around six times, eight times. Half the time when he quotes this from the Goinim, he just quotes it and he leaves it like that, that a Zava needs Mayim Chaim. Half the time Rashi quotes it and he says that it's wrong. And he quotes it to Sefta and Megillah. It says Beferish, Ein Bein Zav LeZava, Ela SheHazav Ton Mayim Chaim HaZava, Ein Etun Mayim Chaim. So Beferish it to Sefta. So this Mishnah in Para is speaking about mixing in the ashes from the Paraduma. If they burn the Paraduma, they mix in the ashes with a barrel full of water, and all of that water will now be declared as Mei Para, and you can be Mazan Shlish Shvi from the Paraduma water on anyone who's a Tomei Meis to enable him to be the one who's a Tomei Meis has to have Hazor Shlish Shvi, and then he's Tovel in a mixer. If he's just Tovel in a mikveh without Azor Shli Shishvi, it doesn't help him. He has just had Azor Shli Shishvi, doesn't help either. So Azor Shli Shishvi is matcha him, prepares him in advance, so when he'll be Tovel in the mikveh after the Azor Vishvi, then he will become Tahar. So the Chumash said you have to have Mayim Chaim El Keli. Mayim Chaim means actually water from a Mayon. So the Mishnah says very well. It says, Mei Karmion and Mei Figa Pstulim and Mei Shehem, Mei Bitsoim. Yeah. Water from a swamp has a special status because it's not named by Yonah. So the Balabatim didn't know how to learn Mishnayos. They had no Rabbonim over there. So they had this once every 5 years someone would pass by. Rabbi gave a shir and they didn't understand that either. So this Talmud Chacham passed by and he said, Mei Beitzim are not Machshel Kabbalim. So they misunderstood. They thought what he meant was Mei Bitzoim. And then when they got to learning Mishnayos between Minchamar, they got to Parah. So they thought, oh, it's enough in the Mishnah. The Mei Bitzoim doesn't have the din of water. And the whole thing was a mistake. That's only a din in Chatos. Mishum debina Mayim Chayim. The Gemara says you need Mayim Chayim in Chatos. But to be Makshel LeKabel Tumah, you don't need Mayim Chayim. Anyone who designed Mashkim the Yad Shoch Adam is Makshel LeKabel Tumah. So maybe time is also Makshel LeKabel Tumah. Because of the mistake that happened at that time, that the Talmud didn't have a good, he didn't have a clear diction. And the Balabatim were misled into believing, into thinking that Mei Bitsoyim is not called water and it's not even Makshel LeKabel Tumah. So that's why they made a takana b'osu shogos and talman al yore and can not to reshus me rabba. No one should paskin for anybody else in public unless they get heter hayro from the Rebbe, and the Rebbe shouldn't give the heter hayro, Rashi says, unless the talman number one knows the halachas, number two has a clear diction, and number three knows how to explain it. Sometimes you have a clear diction, but he doesn't know how to explain himself. That's have all of the above. Then the Gemara tells another story, which is unclear what is the story time? They break the story. So Rashi and Tosfos say, no, there's something missing in the Gemara. These two stories happened at the same time. In the city Aku. The city Aku is on the border. What border? The border between the area which had Kedusha Shniyah and the area which didn't have Kedusha Shniyah, which only had Kedusha Rishonah. So the inside of the city Aku, which is closer towards Yerushalayim, closer towards the center of Eretz Yisrael, was Niskadish B'Kedusha Shniyah. And the outside half of Aku was only in Scottish with Kedusha Rishonah, it was never in Scottish with Kedusha Shniyah. So there is a din mid the Rabbanon, this is an interesting halach, there is a din mid the Rabbanon that's called Tumas Eretz Amin. The Gemara says in the first parak of the Shabbos, the Gemara tells you when they made this takana. They declared all of Chutzlar is tummy like a cemetery. What did they do that for? They wanted to keep everybody in Eretz Yisrael. That was at the time that when a person became tummy, there was a problem that meant something. Today it doesn't mean anything. So he's tummy. Everybody's tummy anyway. So that doesn't prevent us from doing anything. So they wanted everybody to stay in Eretz Yisrael. So they made a declaration that all of Chutzlar is tummy, like a cemetery. But you have to latch it onto something. So they said because when the Mabul occurred, there were dead bodies strewn about all over the place, but not in Eretz Yisrael. The Mabul never affected Eretz Yisrael. Even though there are no walls, if they're going to make a wall, it's going to be a barbed wire fence. It's not going to be a wall to keep out the burning hot water. And the Mabul was hot water. Nonetheless, a psanes occurred. Rashi Chumash writes on Parshas Noach that the Mabul didn't affect Eretz Yisrael. The waters of the Mabul were only the rest of Chutz Lords, and Eretz Yisrael is not affected. So true, there are cemeteries in Eretz Yisrael, but it's not the same as Chutz Lords, where you have dead bodies strewn about all over the place. So Midirabbanan, they declared, Mina Torah, you don't have to be raised at the Lechazina, Loi Machzikina. If you don't see any dead body, you don't have to declare, maybe there's a dead body over here. But Midirabbanan, they declared, all of Chutz Lords is considered like one big cemetery, and Kohanim are not permitted to walk around a Chutz Lord, and if they're born a Chutz Lord, they have to run as soon as they can. They run to Eretz Yisrael because it's like being born in a cemetery. What if a son is born in a cemetery? So he says, well, I was born here, so I want to stay here. No, he has to leave as soon as he knows what's going on. As soon as he's able to leave, he has to leave. So too, the Kohanim are born in Chutz Lord, are not allowed to stay there, and they have to leave Chutz Lord and run to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, Rabbi Kiveger points out in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch that's not the common practice. We know a lot of Kohanim who live in Chutz Lord. So what's going on? So he writes that one of the Sfardish Achrayim, Mari Kash, of Yankov Castro, writes in his tshuva is that since this whole din of Tumas Eretz Amim is only Midirabbanan, and there is an opinion in the Rishonim that the Kohanim today are all Tmei Mesim anyway, and there's no prohibition in adding tumal to masoi, since some every kohen must have been in contact with a mace at some time or another. Is that necessarily true? A young kohen never went to a funeral. He was never in contact with a mace. His mother went to a funeral, so the mace is an avi avos hatumah. The mother who went to a funeral when the mother, even if the mother's a kohenis, she's permitted to be metam lemace. If the father's a kohen, he's not permitted to tamal mesim unless it's one of the seven relatives. Let's say the grandparents died, so the father attended the funeral of the grandparents. So the father is a tamei mes, but the mes is avi avos hatumah. The father is only av hatumah. When the father touches his baby child, or the mother touches the baby only becomes a rishon hatumah. The baby doesn't become an av hatumah. So then, if the child is the kind who's going to go to a cemetery or he's going to stay in Chutz Lord, he's elevating the level of Tumah. From being a Rishon LeTumah, he now makes himself into an Av HaTumah because he's coming in contact with the Mesim Amish, or if he goes into Chutz Lot is like a big cemetery, so then it's considered like he's becoming an Av HaTumah, and he needs Hagosh Rishi Shvim Adirabbanam. So it's questionable. So that's what the Mari Kash writes. That since all the Kohanim are Tamei Mesim anyway, which is highly questionable. All kind of Tumah makes many. They're all Rishon Tumah anyway. So if they're gonna walk onto a cemetery, it doesn't really make anything worse. So the Kohanim can go on a cemetery then. So he says, well, we don't really paskin like that shita. That's a minority opinion. But when they get to Tumas Chutz Lartz, it's only Midi Rabbanon. So there we rely on this opinion. So the question is, whose opinion is it? Who's the one who said this opinion? So that's famous, that's known as the Shitas HaRaivit. Rambam writes all of the laws of Tumas Kohanim in Hilchas Ovel and in Hilchas Nazirus. He writes it twice. Because the Dinim are very, very similar. The Nazir is not even permitted to be metamit to the seven relatives. The Nazir has a status like a Kangol. He's not even allowed to be metamit to the Zayin Krevet. But to all the other Mesim, he has the same din. Another has the same din as the Kohen, that he's not allowed to be Metamel Mesim. So the Rambam writes in Hilchas Naziris that if a, let's say, if a Kohen or a Nazir already was Nitmo, he already went to a funeral once, And now he's no longer a kozman that is holding on to the mace. He's permitted to touch another mace. Let's say the Rambam has it like this. Let's say a kohen dies and his son wants to attend the funeral, and the funeral is in Hershenson. But they have another mace in Hershenson who's not related to the kohen. So the Rambam says the kohen is not permitted to go into the oil mace, because when he goes in, he's not in contact with the mace. When he goes in now, he's becoming in contact with both his relative, his father's dead body, and the stranger's dead body. So he has no heter to be mitame to the stranger's dead body. If the kohen, unless there's no other mace in the funeral home, there's only one mace, his relative, so then the Rambam says he's allowed to go in. What happens if the kohen is going in the hearse from the funeral home to the cemetery? So he's with the mace mamish, he's with his mace, one of the Zayin Kerubim, that's permissible. So then while he's holding on to his mace, while he's in the same oil mace, then it's permissible to go even so close to another grave that he's techt al ramas of the other grave, even to touch another mace, is not being moisef tumal to masa. He already is holding on to this mace. This doesn't make it any worse. Milach atchila, to go in, to hold on to two maceim at the same time, and to walk into an oil where there's a mace who's a relative and a mace who's not a relative, that the Rambam says is forbidden, and that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Not allowed to go. The only time the Rambam says it's permissible is if he first was in contact with his mace, and he's still in contact with his mace, while he's still holding on to the mace, he's still in the oil, then he's allowed to get in contact with another mace. It says in Shulchan Aruch, though, that the minig is, they quote from there, minig is that they bury the kohanim at the edge of the cemetery. Because if they're going to bury the kohen's father in the middle of the cemetery, so the kohen has a head, so he's going with the hearse with his father's body. And it doesn't matter, he's going, has dead bodies on the right, dead bodies on the left of the path. That doesn't bother him, he has a head. But then the minute he buries his father, what's he doing? He's in the middle of the cemetery. So how is he going to get out? So on his way out, he's going to be metame to the other mason. So the Rambam writes, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes, that you have to bury the kohanim at the edge of the cemetery. It's not always feasible. Every kohen is going to be buried at the edge of the cemetery. You can't do that. So if they have kohen buried in the middle, so the relatives are not supposed to go. They're going to go. So fine, going, there's no problem. They're going to be in the car with the mace. They're in the car with their mace, so they're allowed to be metami to all the other mace, and no problem. But the minute they finish the kvura, so what are they going to fly in the air? How are they going to get out? Even if they fly in the air, how are they going to get back? They're going to be on top, it's metami boil. They're going to be metami boil. So once they get to the cemetery, they're not supposed to go further. Unless the road in the cemetery is so wide, so when the car goes in the middle, he's going to be chutzlet al ramas from all the other mason. The roads are not so wide in the cemetery. Very hard to be chutzlet al ramas from all the mason there. So the Rambam writes like that. If the kohen knows in advance that there's one of his seven relatives and another mason in this funeral home, he says you're not allowed to enter. But let's say it's only his father is there. So he goes, and then he goes in the car to the cemetery. So then he can imitame to any other mason on the way. But once he lets go from the father's body, once he's no longer together with the father's body, even if he touches another mason on the same day, and he's not going to add on additional days, Bein Kovako is going to need Hazor Shlishi Yishvi. Today is, let's say, what's today? Monday. Today's Monday. So Hazor Shlishi Yishvi, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. He would need Hazor on Wednesday and on Sunday. That would be the Hazor Shlishi Shvi. Wednesday and Sunday. So if he touched the dead body of the father today at the 9 o'clock in the morning, then in the afternoon he's going to touch before the Shkia. He's going to touch another mace. He's not going to add on any additional days of Tumah. It's going to be the exact same level of Tumah Hazor Shlishi Shvi. So the Rambam says no, because while he's touching the mace, he has more Tumah than while he's not touching the mace. The mace is avi avos hatumah, and the person who's touching the mace becomes an av hatumah. That's only once he lets go. While he's still holding on to the mace, that's called tumah b'chiburin. So while he's holding on to the mace, if he touches, let's say a person touches a mace and then he lets go, then he touches someone else. So the mace is avi avos, and I'm an av hatumah. When I touch the third guy, he becomes a rishon tumah. If I'm touching the mace now and I touch the other person, so the other person becomes an av hatumah. Not a rishon and a tumah. That's called tumah b'chiburim. When electricity is being transmitted. So I transmit the tumah directly from the mace to the other person. So that means that when I touch the Zayin Kareizim at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was a higher level of an Av HaTumah. And now the afternoon I let go, I'm a lower level of HaTumah. I'm going to touch another Meis, now I'm going to be a higher level. True, I won't need an extra day for the Hazor Shlishi Shvi, but right now, by touching another Meis, I'm being Meisiv Tumah Altimasi. So the Rambam Paskin said that's not permissible. So the Raivet disagrees with that Rambam. It's a machloikis in the Gemara, a Abai v'Rove. And it's a shaila how you're supposed to. It's a machloikis, not a Abai v'Rove. It's a machloikis Rabbi v'Rav Yosef in the middle of Nazir. Machloikis Abai v'Rove is a different question, whether Kain is allowed to go into a room where there's a ghost says. So there, the two girses, which way does Rabbi say? And we know what, whichever way Rabbi says is the way we paskin. So that's a machloikis in Shulchan Aruch, how to paskin. Machab and Ramo. Is a kohen permitted to go into the oil agoises? Agoises means the person is about to die imminently. He's still alive. Agoises is kechai, but he's about to die very soon. So the Ramah paskins for Ashkenazim that a kohen and a nozer are not permitted to come in contact with a goses. But this is the machlekes in the Gemara in Nozer and Ramem Gimel also machlekes Rabbi Rav Yosef, and there's a machlekes the Ramah and the Rabbi how to read the Gemara. So the Rambam understands that even if I touch my mace early in the morning, any mace, and I let go and I'm going to touch another mace now, that's also called Mosef Tumal Tumasai. Even though it's not going to cause me to postpone the Hazor Shlishishvi with the Tefillah, because at the time that I touch the new mace, that makes my level of Av HaTumah a higher level because of the Tumah B'Chiburim story, and that's an Easter. And the Rabbi writes, he thinks that that's Muslim. That's all we have in the. We don't really have that in the Rabbi. The Rabbi thinks that he's not like it. The Rabbi writes that he ain't a like it. And whoever says that he is like it, Rambam, the Rabbi says, and the one who thinks that he's like it, all of Araya. The burden of proof is on him. He doesn't see it. That's what the Rabbi, a long paragraph in the Rabbi. So that's a question the Mishlam Melech has. What did the Rabbi mean that he ain't a like it? Did the Rabbi mean to say that it's mutter? Or the Rabbi agrees with the Rambam that it's usser to touch another mace on the same day in the afternoon? He just says ain't a loike. Maybe he just says that there's no malchus. Maybe it's like a chotishir of the iser, but it still will constitute an iser derais. So Mishlam Melech writes about this. He's not sure. The Dogam of Rava on the side of the Yerideya. Dogam of Rava is the Haoris of the Noda Yehuda. Writes on the side of the Yerideya that somebody showed him the Ravid in the Tzvim Deim, where he writes the Feirish. The Ravid in Tzvim Deim is the same Ravid. There were a few different Ravids. So sometimes the Ravid disagrees with the Ravid. The Shach writes in Chelek Aleph Yerideya. Sometimes you have some Rishonim quote the Ravid saying one way, others quote the Ravid saying another way. So he says there are two different Ravids. The third Ravid was wrote a history book, so he never says anything about Halacha. So he's out of the picture. But there were two who wrote on Halacha. So the Shach writes that sometimes the Ravid was the father-in-law of the Ravid. The two who disagree, father-in-law and son-in-law. So the two who were in learning, one wrote the Eshkol. He was the Rabbeinu Avram Av Bezdin of Narbonis. Rabbeinu Avram Ben Yitzchok Av Bezdin of Narbonis. He's known as the Ravid Haro Av Bezdin. And then his son-in-law was Rabbeinu Avram Ben David, who wrote on the Rambam. So the Tamim Deim are the Chuvis of the Ravid. The Bala Sogas, the same Ravid, the same one who writes on the Balamor, the same one who picks on everybody. So he wrote the Chuvas, most of the Chuvas in the Tzvim Deim by him. So in the Chuvas in the Tzvim Deim, he writes the Feirish that if the Koyin is Chayzer Metame the same day there is an Issa, it's just that the Zayn Aloike. He never meant to say what he wrote in the Hasogas on the side of the Rambam. Whoever says that he's Loike, all of Harai, the burden of proof is on him, because I say that he's Zayn Aloike. That's all he meant to say was that it's ain't a loike. He never meant to say that it's mutter. He just meant to say that it's ain't a loike. So this Mari Castro is assuming not like that. He's assuming that the Rabbi meant to say that it's mutter. Yeah, but even if the Rabbi said it's mutter, the Rabbi only said on the same day. If he touched the mace in the morning, he's going to touch another mace in the afternoon, so he's not being mace of Tumal Tumasa. If it's on the same day, that's mutter. Here, it's not the same day. So this is a further extension. Some Rishonim say, based on this Ravid, the Smag, says, based on the Ravid and the Shulti Gibarim, in the beginning, Shavuos quotes this from the Smag. The Smag doesn't quote, I don't think the Smag ever quotes a Ravid. But he writes mother from other Rishonim like this. Smag is from the Balei Tesis. He never quotes any Ravid. So the Smag wrote such an idea on his own, that just like if the Kohen already went to a funeral today, to his father's funeral today. He's permitted to be mitame in the afternoon to a different mace, because not being Moisef to Mal to Moisef, because he's not extending the period of time that's going to be tame. He needs the same Hazor Shlishi Shvi, he's not extending an extra day. So this Mag writes that the same is true, Bizmana said that we don't have any Eifa Parah. We don't have any Parah Dume Eshes. So the guy, even if he went to his father's funeral 10 years ago, if he wants to touch another mace today, that's permissible, because he's not being Moisef Tumal to Masai. He's not causing, by being Mitame to the new mace, he's not causing himself to remain in the state of Tumah for a longer period of time, because Ben Kovakal, nobody has any Parah Dume water, and Ben Kovakal, you can't be Mitahir yourself. So that's what this Mari Castro is relying on. He's assuming like there is one opinion like that, based on the understanding that the Ravid, this Mag, has such an opinion. It happens that it's not the Ravid's opinion. The Ravid writes explicitly in the Tzvim Deim that if he's chayzer mitami to another mace, just ain't a loike, but it is an isa deraisa. So this Mari Castro is assuming like this Mag that it's Heter Gomer. And then he's assuming that not only is it Heter Gomer, if it's on the same day, even if it's on a later date, even 10 years later, as long as you don't have any Parah Duma ashes yet, you don't have any Parah Duma water yet. So since there is such an opinion in the Smag, so we rely on that opinion with respect to Chutzlar. So Shver Echeshman. Why? Because Chutzlar is only with the Rabbanon, so it's a Sveika the Rabbanon. It's not even a Sveika the Rabbanon. We totally have rejected this opinion, this Smag and this writing. It's a problem. That's the best Rabbi Kivega can come up with. Rabbi Kivega on the Aradeya, he writes the practices, all the Kohanim do it. They tell you, he gives you a marmuff and tells you, look in the Mari Castro that he writes this tzadlog. Anyway, but in the Gemara it says that it's us. Here's the Gemara, Hey Amabes. Gemara it says that it's us. And why did they quote these two stories? What's the connection between the two stories? Because there were the two parts of the city, Aku. A Kohen went from the inside of Aku to the outside half of Aku. And that's when Rav Chiya got angry at him and he said, you're not allowed to go. You're a Kohen, so you're not allowed to go to Chutzlort. Because the outside half of Aku has Tumas Chutzlort, which is Kibes HaKvoris, and Kohanim are not allowed to go. So the Kohen excuses himself and he says, what can I do? My father was a wise guy. He married a Grusha, and I'm a Cholo. So a Cholo doesn't have any Kedusha's Kuhuna. There's a difference between a Cholo and a Balmum. A Balmum has Kedusha's Kuhuna. He just can't be makor karbanos in the Beis Hamikdash, but he can eat truma, and he's not allowed to marry a grusha, and he's not allowed to be mitame lemeis, and he has all the dinim of kohanim. And a cholol means that he's emptied out from kedushas kuhuna. If a kohen marries one of the noshim who are surahs with kuhuna, so all the children are cholol, and a cholol means emptied out from kedushas kuhuna. So that's what he says. My father was a character. My father married a grusha, nosan ena begrusha. And I became a cholol, so that's why I'm permitted to marry, I'm permitted to go into chutzlort. I'm permitted to be mitame lemeis.
Is the outside of
the island in Israel and
Tanisha? This part
is today.
I think so. I don't know
if the Tumas Eretam has to correspond 100% to the Mabul. They were looking for something to latch onto. They wanted everybody to stay in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know. We've got to look up the din. Whether Tumas Eretam is dependent on Kedusha Rishoyna, around Kedusha Shniya, around something else. I don't know. My impression was, you've got to take a look. I think Tosfos on the first daf in Gittin has this long arichas from this Yerushalmi, that they quote here, Rishalmi and Shvius, that Aku is half inside and half outside. So I think they assume that the outside half of Aku was miskadosh b'kedusha rishonah. I think so. So it didn't have the kedusha shniyah. So the second story was about the kohen who went from the inside half to the outside half, that the outside half had a tumas eretz amim. And the first story was that the people were loshim isoseihem b'tumah, means they had tvuah that was tohar, they mixed it with water, and then they took it into chutzlorit. And so chutzlorit is metami ba'oil. So it's metami everything. And then they were bringing it back into Eretz Yisrael. So they said to the Balabatim, what are you doing? That's tameh. How do you bring it back into Eretz Yisrael? You have to warn all the people that they're eating bread that's tameh, bread or cake or cookies that's tameh. So they said, no, but the food was never hukshel lekabel tumah because we didn't use water from, we didn't use rainwater, we used water from Mei Bitzoyim. And the Talmud Chacham told us that Mei Bitzoyim are not makshir, and then we found an off in the Mishnah in Torah that Mei Bitzoyim is not considered water. So they told him, what are you talking about? The Mishnah in Torah is a different story because it's not Maim Chayim. But it is Maim. It's Maim Binegeh to Makshel Kabbal Tumah. Of course it's Maim. Taisus has a problem. There is a Gemara in Bava Basra, Dafayin Dalet, the third Taisus on the top and on the base, on the hearing base. The Gemara in Bava Basra comments on Carmion and Figo that these are Mei Mayonis. They are Mei Mayonis. What does the Gemara say by us that it's not Maim Chaim? It is Maim Chaim. The water in Mei Carmion and Mei Figo doesn't come from rainwater. It comes from under the ground sources. It should be considered Mei Mayonis. So the Taisus comes up. So what does the Gemara by us say? Linya Mei Chatos, Linya Paradumas, Nogoda, Bina Maim Chaim, Veleko. It is Maim Chaim. So the Rabbi Natam says it should say Bina Maim Chaim El Keli. There are two words missing. Or it's like Bina Maim Chaim Bechule, the Goymer. There are two words missing. Why? Maim Chaim El Keli means that there shouldn't be any chatzitza between the Maim Chaim and the Kli. And here, since Mei Carmi and Mei Figo is full of dirt, it's not clean water, it's dirty water. Even though the dirt is spread out all over the place, the Rabbi Natam interprets the Gemara that that constitutes a chatzitza between the Maim Chaim and the Kli. It's a novel interpretation. The printer wasn't happy with it. They wrote on the side to look in the Taisus and Bava Basra to give another answer. One answer is what the Rabbi Natam said, and the other answer is a different answer. Shvera. It's not really the printer, I'm kidding. All these comments and brackets, that's by Rabbi Yishaya Berlin. The printer included it. Everything in the Masoras HaShatz that's in brackets was added on by Rabbi Yishaya Berlin, who was a contemporary of the Nadi Yehuda. They had Shuvas, and he wrote the Svarim in Halacha. Now the Gemara enters into an interesting topic of Pshara. So the Gemara has three opinions regarding Pshara. If two Balabatim, if two Baladinim have a Sichsuch and Dinim Omenes, it's certainly permissible to for someone on the side to recommend to them that they should go for arbitration. Why not arbitrate in a peaceful fashion? And each one should make a compromise and give in to each other, so everyone will walk away happy. But that's not a problem. The Tanoim had a machlokes that goes as follows: what if the two baledinim came to the rabbanim and they said, "We want to have a din Torah"? Are the rabbanim permitted to say, "Yeah, but we would recommend that you should go for pshara"? We would recommend that rather than go din according to the letter of the law, you should go according to pshara. So is that permissible? So there are three opinions in Tanoim. So the top Tana on Vav on the base and the second line from the top, Rav Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Lili says, "Asur libtzoa." It's forbidden for the Bali. It's forbidden for the Dayanim. If the Baladinim came to the Dayanim for a din Torah, it's prohibited for the Dayanim to mention the possibility of having arbitration, having a pshara. Chala batzei hareza choyte. Moshe Rabbeinu always said, "Yikav adin is hard. Whatever the din is, the din is." Aaron, it was Ayiv Shalom, right? Ayiv Shalom, Aaron Akon used to make pshor. The Gemara says, but he says you're not allowed to make pshor. So that's what Rashi and Taisa say. No, Taisa says, you're not allowed to make pshor if they came to you for a din Torah. If you're Moshe Rabbeinu, but they never came to Aaron for a din Torah. So Aaron was a stranger, an outsider. So an outsider is permitted to recommend. Why don't you both agree to arbitration? But the Dayan, the first Tana, Rav Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Lili, holds that that's called Ivus Adin. That's a miscarriage of justice. If they come to the Dayanim and the Dayanim recommend raise the possibility of a pshar, it's against the din. We don't pass on like Rav Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Lili. Either Pasuk says a Batzeh Beirech Niyet Hashem, the one who praises the one who makes a pshar is cursing God. That's Rav Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Lili. And so the other Tanaim say, no, that's not what it's talking about. Other Rabbi, the one, the Dayan who does a pshara, is ganz fine. The Pasuk Batzeh Berech goes on something else, and each Tana has a different interpretation. So what do the other Tanaim? We don't accept Rav Elazar ben Rabbi Yosef Lili's opinion. So what are the other two opinions? The Gemara has three shittas among the Tanaim. So the second opinion is that it's mutter liftsoa. If the dayan wants to, he's permitted to raise the possibility of having a pshara, but he's not obligated to. And the third opinion is that it's a mitzvah liftsoa. What do you mean it's a mitzvah liftsoa? And how far do you go twisting his arm? So the Gemara says no. Here on the top line, the last line on Vav on the base and the top line on Zayim and Aleph. My mitzvah nam the kam Rav Shua ben Korcha mitzvah lememra lehu idina bisa ipshar bisa. The mitzvah of tzad doesn't mean it's a mitzvah to pressure the bali dinim until he'll agree to pshar. It's just a mitzvah to raise the possibility by them. They come for a din. So I say, if you want, you can have din. If you want, you can have pshar. That's what it was in the days of the Gemara. There were three opinions. One held asa, one held muta, one held mitzvah. And the third sheet, the mitzvah doesn't mean it's a mitzvah to coax them into it, just a mitzvah to raise the possibility. Manazeb is manazeb. We have a practice that we always encourage the Baladina very, very much that they should go for pshara, because we're not so convinced that we know Choshe Mishpot. So the Dayanim are afraid, the last several centuries, the Dayanim are afraid they may be paskening wrong. So we always tell the Baladina, we would really encourage you highly that you should agree to a pshara, because we don't want to get involved in a din. We don't know the dinim so well. We ourselves are guessing. We don't know the dinim. What kind of an institution is pshara? So we assume the tour writes in the siman of pshara in Choshen Mishpat siman Yud Beis, all about pshara. The tour writes that just like there's a din losata mishpat, just like the dayanim are prohibited to be mata mishpat if there's a din Torah, so too they're prohibited, they're forbidden to be mata mishpat in a pshara. Pshara means you have to express your honest to goodness opinion as to what you think Yosha dictates in this case. So what if I know in my heart Yosha dictates this way, but this guy signs my check, he's my boss, I better favor him if I know what's good for me. The rabbi knows that's the president of his shul. So if he doesn't pass in favor of the balabas, he's going to be in big trouble. So the Torah writes are just like there's a prohibition of Hatoyas Mishpat and Din, so too there is a prohibition of Hatoyas Mishpat and Pshara. And the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, right, they think there's an Issur Shechad also, just like it's forbidden for a dying to take Shechad, to give Shechad, to take Shechad, to paskin improperly in a Din Torah, so too there's a prohibition of Shechad in a Pshara. And Rabbi Kivega on the side of the Chosh Mishpat quotes one of the Acharonim who says that there is a concept of Toye Bedvar Mishneh Choyzer. Just like the Gemara says, if the Bezdin made a mistake the first time, so if it's Toy B'Dvar Mishnah, the one who walked off with the money cannot say, I'm Muchzak on the money and I hold like the first Pesach. No, it's Toy B'Dvar Mishnah Chayzer. He has to surrender the money. If he's still around, he has to give back the money and we give it back to the Baldin. Only if it's a Toy B'Shikal Adah can the first Baldin insist, I want to stick with the first Pesach. And the Dayanim have left that they have to make good, they have to pay, because they realize that they paskin wrong. So the Rabbi Kivega quotes from Achrayim that what if you made a pshara, and after you made the pshara, then you realize the pshara was so cockeyed, you realize that it's totally off kilter, that the pshara that you made doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Mamish toy b'dvar mishnah, absolutely unreasonable. It's not a question ken zogin hazayim, ken zogin faker, different perspectives as to what Yosha dictates. No, afterwards everybody realizes that it's totally improper. So the Kvegi quotes the Achrayim that a Toye B'Dvar Mishneh Chayzer even applies to Pshara. That's unfortunately very commonly misused, that Rabbi Kvegi is very often misused. When you have a Din Torah, so the Bezdin passes one way, so the guy who loses, if there's enough money, the guy who loses will go to some other Bezdin, and I'll get them to write a letter that the first Bezdin was a Toye B'Dvar Mishneh, I bet it was a Pshara. No, it's Toye B'Dvar Mishneh and a Pshara also. Toye B'Dvar Mishneh. How can be Toye B'Dvar Mishneh? Every case, even if the Dayanim made a mistake, it's very hard to be Toye B'Dvar Mishneh on a Pshara. On a Pshara, to be Toye B'Dvar Mishneh is very hard. So why is the Pshara binding? We assume Pshara is also a Psak of Bezin, but there are two types of a Bezin. There's the Bezin who passes according to the letter of the law. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yikav Adin Sahar. And then there's the Bezin who passes according to the spirit of the law of Lifni Meshuras Hadin. And the psak is binding because it's a psak bezin. It's a psak of lefnei mishuras hadin. We cannot force a psak of lefnei mishuras hadin on the baladinim unless they agree. Both parties have to agree. But once they agree, and then the Bezdin issues a psak of Shara, of Yosher, the psak is binding not because they made a hiskaivus midas, not because they accepted upon themselves to follow what the rabbis say. No. The accepting enables the rabbis to issue a psak of lifnim yishuas adin, and the psak is binding because the psak of any Bezdin is binding. That's what the Beis Yosef and Simon Yud Beis quotes in the name of the Tshuvas HaRosh. The Rosh, speaking about the binding force of a Bezdin of Pshara, quotes an expression from the Gemara in Perek Mitzvah Chalitza. At the end of Yevamos, where the Gemara has an expression, Beidina Basa Beidina Loi Daiti. So the Gemara there, in the original context of the Gemara, means something different. The Gemara there is discussing the following. The couple was married, and the husband died, and they had no children. Means this, it doesn't matter, they didn't have, means the husband never had any children, not from a previous marriage, not out of marriage. The husband never had any children, so then the din requires that you have to have chalitza. Chalitza has to be performed by the surviving brother of the husband. So let's say a man comes in from Sweden, and he says he's the brother, he comes to New York. No one knows who he is. No, he says that he's the brother. We didn't have a chance, and he's only going to be in New York for 2 days. And he says, take my picture, take my photograph, here's my ID, whatever, and then you'll find out who I am. So is it permissible for the Bezdin to perform a chalitza, and then they'll investigate later on to find out if he's really, they'll take his photograph and then send it to the Rabbonim in Sweden, and they'll find out if he's really the brother of the mate or an imposter. Or do we say, no, we can't supervise a chalitza unless the Bezdin first ascertains that he is the brother of the Nifta. So the Gemara has a discussion. Are you concerned that if the Bezdin will supervise the Chalitza and they'll write, so if they'll write in the document, after the Yevama does Chalitza, so the Bezdin always writes to get Chalitza, Shtar Chalitza, as a Shtar Raya. So they write that we have ascertained, they normally write, we have ascertained that this man was the brother of the Nifta, they had the same father. Doesn't have to be a full brother, even if it's a half brother, but they have to have the same father. So you write, Ishtamay Deinu. Means we have ascertained Achur the Mister Meyabahu. We have ascertained this man who came in front of us is the brother of the Nifter, and we supervise the Chalitza, and he read the Pesukim, she read the Pesukim, and the Chalitza, everything is done properly, and she's permitted to remarry. So that's what it normally says. Now, if the Bezdin will do a Chalitza, and they won't recognize who he is, and they'll write in big letters and underline, we did not ascertain that he is the brother of the Nifter. We did not ascertain, and we're still working on it. So then there's no chashash that any Bezdin is going to make a mistake. They wrote some big letters and they underlined it. We did not ascertain whether he's the right person who is qualified to do the chalitza. We don't know if he's the brother of the Nifta. We went through a chalitza and we're going to have to find out whether the chalitza is out. They give this document to the Yevoma. So it's a meaningless document. So there's no problem. The problem the Gemara raises is, what if they give her a document which doesn't say one way or the other? It just says, a man came and he said he's the brother of the Nifta and he did the chalitza. And it doesn't say one way or the other, we did ascertain, we didn't ascertain. So the Gemara has a machlokes, are you allowed to write such a vague get chalitza? Are you choshish lebezin toim, or you're not choshish lebezin toim? Do you say, beidina basa beidina loy daiki, if the woman's going to want to remarry later, the later bezin who will be dealing with the issue of permitting the woman to remarry, it's not going to investigate whether the earlier bezin made a mistake. They'll assume the earlier says signed by 3 people that they supervise the Chalitza, even though it doesn't say explicitly that they ascertain that he is the brother of the Nishter. The later Bezdin will assume that the first Bezdin didn't do anything wrong, and they probably established that he's the brother of the Nishter. Or do you say no? That Beidina Bas Beidina Daiki. They'll notice that it doesn't say we established his identity, so they won't allow the woman to remarry unless the later Bezdin ascertain that the one who did the Chalitza was actually the brother of the Nishter. So the Gemara has such an expression in the middle of that Gemara. Beidina, basa beidina loy daka. The later Bezdin is not going to check out whether the earlier Bezdin did right or wrong. They're going to assume that they did right. So in the context that it appears in the Gemara, this expression, it's a psychological statement. So the later Bezdin will probably not investigate, they'll probably rely on the earlier Bezdin. But the Rosh uses that expression here in the Tshuvas HaRosh, quoted by the Beis Yosef. Simon Yud Beis, the Rosh is explaining the binding force of a psak of pshara. Reuven and Shimon had a sichsich and mamas. They go to Bezdin and give him a pshara. They encourage him to go for pshara. They make a pshara, then they give a psak pshara. Then the guy who lost the din Torah, Reuven and Shimon, is not happy. He says, I want to go to a din Torah. So what's to prevent him from going to a din Torah now? why doesn't he have the right to go to a din Torah? So that's what the Rosh says, no. The first psak is a psak bezdin. The case is closed. You can't go for a din Torah. There's nothing incorrect about the first psak. The first psak doesn't correspond to Chosh Mishpat. Yeah, Chosh Mishpat gives you the laws of din. And this was a psak of Lefnim Mishuas Adin Shu. We can't force upon you. We can't force on the Baladinim a psak of Lefnim Mishuas Adin. But if they both agreed to undergo if they both agreed to a pshara, and the Bezin issued a psak, so the psak has the status of a psak halacha of Lefnim Mishuas Adin. That's the question. How come you can't force? There is a pasuk in Chumash that says, the Moshe Rabbeinu is mamid all the batidinim, all the dayanim, and so on. So he says, so the Gemara in Bava Metzia understands from that pasuk that you should do lefnim mishuras hadin. Not only din, you have to go lefnim mishuras hadin. So if lefnim mishuras hadin is one of the laws of the Torah, and if a guy doesn't want to eat matzah, call for nosos. Guy doesn't want to sit in sukkah. Makanosos should take in nafsho. He doesn't want to bench chanukalit. Makanosos takes nafsho. So if he doesn't want to agree to pshara, why don't we beat him up until he agrees? Why do you have to have that he should agree out of his own free will? Why don't we pressure him? Why don't we twist his arm and break his arm and beat him up and bop him over the head until he agrees to pshara? We don't do that. If he doesn't want, he doesn't want. We tell him it's really more correct. Litzvah the member who we just give him the option. Do you want pshara or do you want din? Why don't we insist that he should go for pshara? If pshara is lefnim yishuras adin, then the Torah requires that everybody should go lefnim yishuras adin. So the Rama says, is a machloikis a rishonim if you koifa on lefnim yishuras adin. A pshara for sure you're not koifa. But in general, lefnim yishuras adin is a machloikis, and we assume that you're not koifa. You're not koifa on lefnim yishuras adin, so that's why you're not koifa, I'm sure. Taka, how come you're not koifa on lefnim yishuras adin? So usually the explanation that's given is as follows. If a person refuses to sit in sukkah, and the Bezin beats him up till he sits in sukkah, and he's crying, and he eats his kezayis laila rishon, and he's muttering under his breath, someday he's going to get even with these rabbonim, he's going to beat them up someday. So it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what he mutters under his breath. He ate his kezayis and the sukkah. He's eating the matzah. He can't stand the matzah with the maror and arbikosis. Bottom line, he drank the arbikosis. He said the haggadah. He ate the matzah maror. He's yaitse. What does it matter what he's muttering under his breath? But over here by pshara, the whole mitzvah of pshara is to do the lefnim yishuras hadin behit nadvut, out of the goodness of your heart, that you should have midas tovus, that you shouldn't only go according to din. You should understand on your own to go lefnim yishuras hadin. So what good is it going to do? The Bezin is going to beat him up until he's going to go lefnim yishuras hadin. He won't even be out to the mitzvah. If they beat him up and they force him to do lefnim yishuras hadin, he will not be in fulfillment of the mitzvah. The Bezin has no right to beat him up if even after beating him up it's not really going to turn out that he fulfilled the mitzvah of Aydai Talahem HaSadech HaShiyach HaBav Samas HaShiyasna. Right. Right, but the lefnim yishuras hadin, it's usually something that has to be out of the goodness of his heart. The goodness of his heart, that is, that's what he really wants, but it's not from the goodness of his heart. It has to be b'lev shalom. If it's not b'lev shalom, you're not yetzer the mitzvah. That's what usually, it could be a different hezber. That's what many assume is the biur. Why the Ramah and Siman Yud Beis? The Ramah quotes the Machlokes, and we assume that Bezin is not kaifa on the lefnim yishuras hadin, and Bezin is also not kaifa on pshara. So once you establish this premise that a pshara is binding because it's a psak Bezin, then now the question is, well, how much of a Bezin do you need for pshara? You can't just say an arbitration, pick three going from the American Arbitration Society, and pick anybody you want and try and make an arbitration. No, it's not some an arbitration. It's not some a compromise. It's not a compromise that he says he wants $1 million, he says zero, so you divide it in half, you give him $500,000. Sometimes the pshar is 100% in his favor, sometimes 100% in his favor, and sometimes somewhere in the middle, but it's not necessarily going to be exactly in the middle. Whatever Yosha dictates, that's what the pshar is. So if it's really a psak of a bezin, so how much of a bezin do you need? So the Gemara says, Lema, should I say that there seem to be three opinions among the Tanoi, whether Pshara needs a bezin of one, or two, or three? Because that's what it looks like, that there are three views in the Tanoi. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, the last four lines on Ham and Bay, sounds like he says, Pshara Bishnayim, that Pshara needs two. So it sounds like there's a middle sheet, there's one sheet to Chad Nami Kosher, and one sheet to three, and one sheet to two. Then the Gemara says, no, there is no such sheet to two. Where Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Pshara Bishnayim, it really means Chad Nami Kosher. Pshara is Biyochid. The Shnayim is that they should be able to serve as Eidim. They should be able to, the two Dayanim should be able to serve as Eidim, that they'll be able to testify later on, that the both parties agree to the Pshara, and no one will be able to back out later on. But the Gemara originally had a Havam, I mean, the Gemara had a suggestion at one point, should I say, Lema, here, 10 lines from the bottom of Vav and Muraf, Lema, plus a Tanai B'Pshar Masav, a Shloisha Masav, a Shlai Masav, a Biyochid. Gemara says, no, there are only two opinions, whether Pshar B'Yochid, Pshar B'Shloisha, and the one who says Shnaim is Kecha Deleva Alei Sahari. What was the Havamina of the Gemara? How would you understand this Havamina, that there should be a Tanu who thinks that Pshar is B'Shnaim? Pshar needs a Bezin, it's a Psaka B'Bezin on a Lefnim Yishur Esadin issue. So who ever heard of a Bezin of Shnaim? A Bezin has to be Shloisha. So I think in the Sefer Sanhedrin Tanu by Chassidus Rebbe on Sanhedrin, he gives the following suggestion. On Gimel and Beis, the Gemara had a brisa where there was Machlekes Rabbi Yoshiya, Rabbi Yonasan. How do you establish that you need a bezin of three for Gzelus HaHavodah? So one Tana says that it says three times Elohim. So you add up, one, two, three is three. The other Tana says it really only says twice, because the first time is Ein Darshan Tchilo, so it only says twice. But you can't have a bezin of Shnayim, because that's in violation of the principle of Ein Bezin Shokel. What's Ein Bezin Shokel? You have to have the possibility of having a split vote. If you're going to have an even number of Dayanim, they can have a split vote and you won't be Machriya. They always require an odd number of Dayanim, so in case there'll be a split vote, there won't be even, that the extra one, the odd Dayan, will be able to be Machriya. That's the Ein Bezin Shokel. So the Sanhedrin Tana points out that the Tesis has over here, on Vava Menalef, Diba Mascha, Bitsua, Bishloisha, they quote a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. They claim, based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it doesn't really say it at all. It's a dimyon. The Tesis thinks, but this is where we pass in Shulchan Aruch, that in the case of a Pshara, you don't follow Rov. If there's a split vote in the Bezin, it's 2-1, so the two do not win. When do you say you follow Rov? If we're all trying to figure out what does it say in the Torah, what does it say in the Gemara, what does it say in Shulchan Aruch, what does the Tzeis HaChoshen say, what's the Halach in this case? So either the Halach is Chayva Pater. So if it's a split vote 2-1, so we assume Acharam Lahas is the two are right, and then one is wrong. But if you're talking about Pshara, you're talking about, I feel inside my heart, I feel Yosha dictates you should pay him $20,000. The other Dayan says, I think Yosha dictates you should pay him $30,000. He's right and he's right, and the third Dayan is right. Each one has a different perspective on life. Each one looks at what Yosha dictates differently. You can't say over here, Acharam Lahatas. You can't say, if it's 2-1, so the likelihood is that the two are right and the one is wrong. How can you say the one is wrong? The one has his perspective. He's entitled to his perspective. He can't say that he's outvoted. He holds that Yosha dictates like that. So there isn't any conflict, really. So that's what we assume in Shulchan Aruch. Whenever you have a din Torah of a Pshore, you don't follow Rav. You have to have a unanimous vote. Unless the Dayanim or unless the Baladina made up in advance, you can paralyze the Bezin like that, which sometimes is necessary. You can paralyze your Bezin if you'll never have you never have a unanimous vote. So sometimes the Babadina may say in advance, or the Bezin may decide in advance, we don't want to insist on a unanimous vote, we want to do a Pshara with the Rav. Okay, so if those are the rules that they made up in advance before they started, so then you're going to follow Rav. That's part of the agreement for the Pshara. That's part of the Pshara. So if Tesis establishes this klal, that's la'aloch, except that la'aloch and chayish mishpat, that you don't follow Rav in a Pshara. So this Chassidus Rebbe writes in the Sefer, so if you hold that the Chumash only says you need two Dayanim for a din Torah. The only reason why you need the third Dayan is because then Bezin Shokel. The only reason why you say in Bezin Shokel is that he should break the tie. It's 1-1, he's going to break the tie, but it's going to be a Pshara, he's not going to break the tie anyway. Because 2-1, they're not going to win. You need a unanimous vote. So what do you need Ein Bezin Shokel for? So if he's not going to serve the role of breaking the tie, so you leave it that it's a bezn of shnai. That's perhaps the Gemara's havamina. Lemaskan it's rejected because that's not correct. Because the Gemara applies ein bezn shokel even to a bezn that doesn't issue an opinion on anything. They're just doing smicha on the parhel and davar shel tzibur. Or they're doing the medida for the egla rufa purposes. They're doing something which has nothing to do with issuing an opinion. So it's not trap to say you're going to go basarai. Any bezin, let's say a bezin for geirus, a bezin for geirus, a maisa bezin. You're going to say it's enough with two. The Gemara says the geirus are shloisha mishpat sibay. So you should really say it's enough with two because they're not paskining on anything. No, we always say ein bezin shokel. In composition of a bezin, you always say ein bezin shokel. So that's why the Gemara rejects it over here. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that you need a. There can't be such a thing. There can't be a tana who thinks that pshara b'shnai. Doesn't make sense. Either you hold pshar b'yachid or pshar b'shloshim. Tana says pshar b'shloshim really holds pshar b'yachid, but k'echev delev alei sahadi, that the one who lost is going to deny later on that he ever agreed to the pshar. So you have to have two witnesses who will be able to testify that it's just not true, that he did agree to the pshar. Then the Gemara has the question whether pshar tzvich a kinyan or not. In order that the pshar should be binding, do you require that the one who lost in advance, we don't know who's. If you make tesis, not sure when do you make the kinyan. They make the kinyan with the baladinim after the case is already adjudicated. After the bezin says, based on apshar, we say you should give him $20,000. And now we want you to make a kabbalah's kinyan that you're going to give him the $20,000. If that's the pshat, then we understand it. But we don't. That is not our practice. We make the kabbalah's kinyan before the whole din Torah starts. You're going to wait till after the Dintar. You're going to have the Dintar goes on and on and on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and then we're going to tell the Baladin, if he came to this conclusion, one guy's going to walk out. He said, they don't accept it. And if you didn't make the Kabbalah's Kinyan, it's not binding. So we don't do that. We always make the Kabbalah's Kinyan in advance before anything begins. Taisus is not sure. When do you make? The big fat Taisus on the bottom of Vav Amaral. So that's where they start off with that discussion. Is the Kabbalah's Kinyan done before the Bezin starts their whole Yeshiva's Bezin? Or after they've already notified the Baladinim what the psak is. But then you need the kinyan that it should be binding. So we assume that the kinyan is done way in advance. So the Gemara raises a question. If makshinam pshara ledin, we say the pshara is a psak. And there's a din of hatayis mishpah, there's an isur sheikha, and there's a din of toy b'dvar mishnah. And it's a psak of a bezin, it's not in the realm of din, it's a psak in the realm of lifting Yeshua Sadim. We can't force it down the throats. We only have pshara if the both parties agree in advance to have the pshara. But if they both agree, so it doesn't really make sense that you need a Kabbalah's kinyan. So the Gemara says, no, nonetheless, vilchus of pshara tzvich a kinyan. You do need a kinyan. Taka, why? Why do you need a kinyan? Why do you need a kinyan? If a psak bezin is binding, so let it be binding because of the fact that it's a psak bezin. So Tesis makes some kind of a statement over here that really has to do with the nature of the institution of kinyan sudur. We know from many Rishonim, from the Rambam, the Ravid, and from Tesis, and from many other Rishonim, that if this kinyan sudur is a different kind of a kinyan. It's not like anything else that we, not like any other kinyan that we are familiar with. So we'll have to, Belinette will have to discuss that topic. What is the nature of kinyan sudur? And we'll understand why Pshara Tzvich a kinyan. I want to